Everybody is debating this as, are you for the mullahs or are you for regime change? You have to look at all of this in the history of it and the neocons in 9/11 saying they were going to regime change seven countries and use 9/11 as the pretext.
Right after 9/11, about 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me in. He said, sir, you gotta come in. You gotta come in and talk to me a second. I said, well, you're too busy. He said, no. He says, we've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq. This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, we're going to war with Iraq. Why? He said, I don't know. He reached over on his desk. He picked up a piece of paper. And he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today. And he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. I said, is it classified? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. Were we to get out early, we'd be intensifying the threat against us of a super powerful Sunni extremist group, which was now legitimated by overt Saudi funding in an effort to hang on to a toehold inside Iraq and block Iranian expansionism.
And it wasn't just Wesley Clark releasing classified info. They said the Project for New American Century a year before 9/11 that they needed a big attack to be able to do this. And so I don't like the mullahs. I don't like their dictatorship, but this is not America first. So I've got a lot of the folks out there that don't like Iran because they blew up the Marine base and all the rest of it and attacked Israel. I don't like the Iranian leadership either. Neither does their population. They're very unpopular. Even Eric Prince, he's looked at the different ethnic and religious groups there. There's a very good chance this is going to be a civil war. We can be sucked into a new Vietnam. And that's if we're successful getting rid of the mullahs. So it's a real roll of the dice. But no one can deny that this is an extremely bold move by Trump. And Trump said, if they're going to get a nuke, I'm going to go in and stop them. Now, here's the big story. And I told you this at least 15 years ago, and then I talked to my other Pentagon sources, and they said, yeah, that's true, and you shouldn't know that. But they have cars, vans, taxi cabs, you name it, that the West has in Iran that drive around that have sensors on them that scoop up the air, and then they send it back and have it tested. And 15, 16 years ago, they were driving around the enrichment centers, so they stick them out in the middle of nowhere trying to keep away from that, but they can also follow vehicles that are transporting it, and they picked up heavily enriched uranium from the centrifuges. So when you hear Israel saying for 20 years, they're 2 weeks from a nuke, that's because they have been. Now, just because that's true doesn't mean Israel has a right to strike them. We're going to attack North Korea because they have nukes? I want to be clear. Iran is trying to get a weapons program. They refuse the peaceful program and the free fuel to build power reactors. They don't need reactors. They are full of oil and gas. So it is true that they've been pursuing a nuclear program. I don't believe you have a right to attack them just because of that. Can Iran attack Israel because they've got nukes? Now, here's the headline, and this is officially on the Iranian news channels. Iran needs only 1 week to conduct a nuclear test, says member of Iranian Security Committee, their Security Council, and a high-level member of parliament. There's a bunch of statements by the council. We can have a bomb in 1 hour. We can have a bomb in 1 day. We can have a nuclear test within 1 week. And Iran could test a nuke and show everybody. And, we've had Witkoff saying this earlier in the week. And the bigger deal is they have the delivery systems now with their medium-range ballistic missiles. Now, when I state those facts, people go, oh, my God, you agree with Israeli propaganda. Not everything Israel says is a lie. Now Iran says they're 1 week away from being able to test one. And I predict it because that's the obvious move to say, hey, we got nukes. Okay, we got nukes. Because they look at North Korea and others that have nukes that don't get attacked. So this is a big deal.
What's this? Oh, I've got power plant. Oh, what's this? I've got methyl drive. The two ingredients in the power drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
It's amazing to get to come to y'all with good news. All right. There's been a lot of blackpilling here, of course. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins here hosting The American Journal, really having a good time bringing in the morning with y'all. But there's been a lot of negativity, has there not been?
Not
and
negative.
Now we got a peace deal on the table.
Yeah, we got a peace deal. It's very interesting. I'm not sure whether it's going to stick. It could stick.
Right. We'll discuss that today.
We will discuss that today. There's a lot that's been happening. I mean, just over the last 24 hours, I mean, you had everything from the Iran state asking people to come to the streets, protect the power plants.
Yes,
and
yes.
You had people lined up by the droves, and then you have Israel still getting attacked. And there's a lot of things
yes.
happening all at once. And so this morning, we're going to give you guys a breakdown to the best of our ability of what's happening and sift through all the noise.
Sure. Let's go ahead and pull up the Trump tweet. I'm going to go ahead and read this, and then we're going to get into the Iranian statements as well. Keep in mind, there was a doomsday ultimatum. He was going to send them back to the Stone Age. It would be the end of their civilization. All of these things that he was saying, if they didn't come up with a deal by 8 o'clock at night. I don't think he really wanted to attack.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you really think he was bluffing?
No, I think this is a classic case of Taco Trump, and I think he was looking for an off ramp, and I think he finally found one. Thank God.
I was leaning towards what you're saying there, but I was like, there's an ounce of me that feels like he's crazy enough to do this because of the condition that he's in.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and read this, and then I'm going to get into why I think there's still a massive problem with this. And it's actually not America's fault this time. I'm not going to rag on Trump. It's Netanyahu's fault. Let me go ahead and read this. Based on conversations with Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif and Field Marshal Asim Munir of Pakistan, and wherein they requested I hold off the destructive force being sent tonight to Iran and subject the Islamic Republic of Iran agreeing or subject to the subject to the Islamic Republic of Iran agreeing to the complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz, I will stop the bombing for 2 weeks. This will be a double-sided ceasefire. The reason for doing so is that we already have met and exceeded all military objectives, whatever that means, and are very far along with the definitive agreement concerning long-term peace with Iran and peace in the Middle East. We received a 10-point proposal from Iran and believe it is a workable basis on which to negotiate. Okay, so break that down for people because that explain that nothing's set in stone here.
Yeah, nothing's set in stone. This agreement is between the U.S. and Iran, not Israel and Iran. And that was the thing that was confusing me the entire time over the last 24 hours, because I've been tracking this overnight. I've been tracking it this morning.
Sure.
And, you know, you see the reports of missiles still flying over Tel Aviv and the alarms. I'm like, wait, is this not all together?
Well, let's think about it for a second.
Yeah.
So let's think about Trump saying we've succeeded in fulfilling all the objectives. Keep in mind the U.S. stated goal for being in this war. There's been a lot of different reasons they've thrown out there, especially my favorite is that we've been at war with them since 1979. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to invade. But it's always been about the nuclear threat.
Yeah,
right. It's always been about the nukes. We don't want them to have the enriched uranium, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? We're going to go over the deal. There's no mention of the enriched uranium. Okay. Or at least they're going to be able to enrich it at some level. So
yes.
Americans have died. Thousands of civilians have died. This war of aggression that we started, we can't fulfill that objective. But maybe we can get some sort of deal where they're willing to come down to some sort of percentage. I'll tell you what they're not going to budge on at all. The ballistic missile program.
Now, also, this is from him this morning.
We got breaking news.
A country supplying military weapons to Iran will be immediately tariffed. on and only goods sold to the United States of America, 50% effective immediately. There will be no exclusions or exemptions.
Ooh, President DJ. China and Russia are so scared.
6:30.
They're terrified. Well, the thing is Iran has its own military infrastructure because they've been sanctioned forever.
Hold on. I thought the Supreme Court knocked down his ability to use tariffs. What happened to that?
There's some sort of loophole around it where he can still do it in a different way. It's all, I don't pretend to be a lawyer, you know, but okay. God knows what happens in those courts.
Wow.
You know, we can't even begin to understand.
Yeah. That's breaking as of this morning.
Yeah. I'm going to read it. Okay. A big day for world peace. Iran wants it to happen. They've had enough. Likewise, so has everybody else. The United States of America will be helping with the traffic buildup in the Strait of Hormuz. There will be a lot of positive action. Big money will be made. I mean, it's gross, man. Iran can start the reconstruction process. We'll be loading up with supplies of all kinds and just hanging around in quotation. It's okay. In order to make sure that everything goes well, I feel confident that it will, just like we're experiencing in the U.S. This could be the golden age. We hope so. We hope so. I don't want to be too negative, right?
Like, I don't
we
want
hope
to be too negative.
Maybe this is a magical turnaround point.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to break down everything. We've got what the Iranians are saying, what the United States' official position is. The thing is people on the Iranian side and people who support the Iran side are like, oh, the U.S. is lost. And there's propaganda on both sides is what I'm realizing here.
Well,
I don't think Trump has fully succeeded on the 10-point peace plan that they proposed. It's not even a peace plan, because there's some things in there that I'm like, there's no way we would agree to this. One of those being complete removal of the United States from the region.
Yeah,
I don't see how that happens.
I don't think that they're actually going to angle for that. What they're going to do is, I think they're just going to continue to hit the Gulf nations instead of hitting the military bases, and they're going to make them leave through another means. That's what I see there. And you know, people are really celebrating this online, as they should. Like, this is a great thing. But a lot of people are saying now, because of the peace deal or peace plan, that this entire war has been worth it.
Mm.
What was achieved? I want to go ahead and read the Iran's 10-point peace plan. This is the Midas Touch article if you want to do overhead shot. Iran's 10-point peace plan. Number one, guarantee that Iran will not be attacked again. So that's some sort of security guarantee that includes, it's got to include another nation like Russia, China, India, one of these big countries in Pakistan, one of these countries in the region. Number two, permanent end to the war, not just a ceasefire after the 2 weeks. Three, this is the big one, okay? End to Israeli strikes in Lebanon. Okay, 1.2 million people
though.
Displaced. Yeah. Number four, lifting of all U.S. sanctions on Iran. That's massive. Five, end all regional fighting against Iranian allies. So, I don't see how Trump agrees to this. You know, like that's Hamas and Hezbollah, and we know how Trump feels about them.
Yep. Keep going.
Iran would reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran would impose a $2 million fee for
Israel. Seven can't.
No, I heard Simon Dixon break it down on the space. And
are you kidding me?
Actually, no, I heard Gary Cardone break it down on the space, and he said, like, that's basically like $2 a barrel tax, because these super tankers, they carry like a million barrels.
Yeah, but
whatever.
But here's the problem, and I do have that article on it, but the Strait is supposed to be one of those things where it's international waters and no one owns that region. People should be able to travel freely.
Sure, but there's like they're pointing at it and going like, look, like the Suez Canal, Panama Canal, they charge fees. Like Egypt charges a fee, like per example. So now we want to charge a fee as well.
No, and I get that. But like, they're not the only ones. Like, there's two sides to it.
It's true.
So it's
true.
Not like, I know Iran is in a power position, but Oman is there.
Number eight, Iran would split the fees with Oman.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It becomes like, it's more of a regional power block thing, as to say, like, United States, Israel, you do not control this region. We're actually the people here.
They're trying to fluff their feather.
Yeah, and it's also them being friendly to Oman. Number nine, Iran would establish rules for safe passage through Hormuz. Number 10, so that means they're going to keep it under military occupation.
Mm.
So like they're gonna have checkpoint there. Number 10, Iran would use Hormuz fees for reconstruction instead of reparations.
Okay.
So instead of the U.S. having to pay.
Well, I mean, it is a long-term gain for them to do that, right?
Sure.
Because if they get reparations, that's something, but this can last for generations if they're able to do it. How do you feel about this 10-point peace plan?
Well, I mean, I think that parts of this are extremely unlikely. Parts of it have already been violated. It just depends on, like, here's the thing. We talk about it a lot. I'm sure the Iranians want this to stop at some level, right?
Yeah.
And, like, that's the thing. The thing is, like, we had Suleiman on, and he's like, it's just like Ukraine, like, fight the last Ukrainian type of thing, where it's a rally around the flag effect. We get that, but ultimately they do want, you know, they do want to have a country. So
no, and I believe they should have sovereignty. I think they should have the right to defend themselves. I think they should have the right to trade in the sanctions. It's just, again, I don't want them to get to the point where they feel like, oh, we're the big dog in the region and we can just start bullying people around, because that's what I'm also afraid of.
Well, the problem is that we've led by a really bad example, and Iran is kind of like, you know, I'm not denigrating the people there, but it's kind of like a medically antibiotic resistant organism.
Yeah.
Right. And like all our tools, which is like the soft power, the sanctions and whatever, we're like, oh, we'll sanction you if you give military aid to Iran. Well, we've been sanctioning Iran for 2+ decades, 3+ decades, 4+ decades. They've learned how to do this stuff by themselves.
Right.
So it's a situation where the usual tools of America that might work on like a Russia, might work on like a EU, might work on a Latin American country. It's just like the Iranians are like, brother, what is this? Like, it doesn't apply.
No, you're right.
Sure.
And here's the thing. I think, I'm just trying to look at the long-term implications. I think what Trump wanted to do, once they took the civilians and they plopped them there,
right?
I think it put him between a rock and a hard place, because they're not going to bomb infrastructure.
I don't think he wanted to do that.
I don't think he knew the implications, right?
Do you want to throw that up there?
Yeah, we can go. That would be, I added that last second. I think that's like clip number 5, if we have that. Okay, no worries. That's
fine. But what you're talking about here is like the Iranian, like, families and children went out to the infrastructure,
yeah,
and like linked hands around.
The state news asked for them to come to the streets, defend your country, nationalism. We saw that there. And then people actually took that action, right?
Right.
I mean, Iran has a strong sense of nationalism. But what I was going with was, I think we got to the point where Trump saw that happen. I don't think he expected that to happen. And he took this as a temporary off ramp, but I don't think,
what's going on with the Hebrew in my ear?
Yeah.
Is this Netanyahu telling me what to do?
Oh, no. It's the video itself.
Oh, I get
yeah.
You.
But it's not on the screen.
All right. We go ahead.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, it's an off ramp for him to just get off of the conflict.
Sure.
And he's still going to have that 10-day war. They're still going to go through the 10-day. I got noise
in my ear. We got feedback in our ears, guys. Yeah. But it's all good. So yeah, the thing we got to keep in mind here is the Israeli occupation of Lebanon and the Greater Israel Project. And all this is fine and dandy and all this is wonderful, but until America actually asserts some willpower here, until America actually has some sort of courage and says no to Israel in the region, and all you got to do is stop. Okay, like we're not asking for the dissolution of the state or anything. All you have to do is not invade southern Lebanon. I don't think that's that big of an ask for peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, but I mean, with Bibi at the head there, he's got his own issues, right?
Sure.
So he's not gonna concede on the whole Lebanon, because here's the thing. Remember, we'll play those in a second, but Bibi looks at this as survival as well, because they have been going back and forth for a very long time, and I don't think he's going to concede on this one.
Yeah, but he has to. I think so.
I agree.
What happens? Like, do you just get to stay in government forever and be the emperor of the Middle East?
No, I think he's out after the region quiets down or calms down, which he doesn't want to happen. It's kind of like how Zelensky just wants the war to keep going on so he doesn't get impeached.
No, it's like Looney Tunes. Like, they run around with like a giant bomb. You know, like they're carrying a giant bomb with a huge fuse, and like it's like carrying it around.
Like, you can't get me.
Yeah, it's like Tom and Jerry level stuff. I want to go ahead and read a little bit of the Iranian statement in response to Trump's apparent capitulation. This is a statement by Iran's Supreme National Security Council on the 2 weeks negotiation conditions. With this strategy and relying on the unprecedented political and social unity that have been created in the country, Iran and the resistance began one of the heaviest combined battles in history with America and the Zionist regime. And during this time, they achieved all the goals they had planned for this battle. Iran and the resistance almost completely destroyed the American military machine in the region, dealt crushing and deep blows to the massive infrastructure and facilities that the enemy had built and deployed in the region over years of war with Iran, inflicted massive casualties on the criminal American army on a regional scale, inflicted devastating and crushing blows on the enemy's forces, infrastructure, facilities and assets inside the occupied territories, and narrowed the field on all fronts to the enemy to such an extent that not only were none of the enemy's main goals achieved, but the enemy realized about 10 days after the start of the war that it would not be able to win the war in any way. And for this reason, it began trying to communicate with Iran through various channels and methods and requested ceasefire. The noble nation of Iran should know that thanks to the struggle of its children and their historical presence on the scene, the enemy has been begging for more than a month to stop the fierce fire of Iran and the resistance with the country's officials, because it was decided from the very beginning the war would continue until the goals were achieved, including the enemy's regret and despair and the removal of long-term threat to the country, responded negatively to all American requests, and the war has continued until today, which is the 40th day. Iran has also rejected the deadlines presented by the U.S. president several times and continues to emphasize that it does not attach any importance to any kind of deadline from the enemy. We now give the great nation of Iran the good news that almost all the objectives of the war have been achieved, and that your brave sons have fought the enemy to a historic impotence and a lasting defeat. Damn. The historic decision of Iran, which enjoys unified support of the entire nation, is to continue this battle for as long as necessary until the great achievements are consolidated and new security and political equations are created in the region based on the acceptance of the power and sovereignty of Iran and the resistance. Regional power.
Regional power. Is that what they're saying?
That's basically what this is talking about.
It's very interesting for me to see these things, because both countries have to position themselves as strong,
sure,
and not weak.
Sure.
So, like, this is a
Trump's propaganda. This Trump, is propaganda. This is I just read you a bunch of propaganda.
Yeah, you just read a bunch of propaganda.
It's the news as well.
Right. But, like, we've entered a new generation of warfare. Like, think about it. We didn't have social media to the extent that we do right now,
sure,
in the previous wars, yeah, or conflicts that we've ever had. So now we're kind of seeing like new levels, new like political commentary, new jokes, new like.
It's info war.
It's info war.
It's literally info war.
There you go. That's the word I'm looking for.
And you see how ahead of the curve this entire operation is, because my dad was talking about all this stuff 30 years ago. And this is why the internet is just a double-edged sword. It's amazing because you can empower yourself. You can learn about anything for free, blah, blah, blah. But also, you know, big government, psyops, intelligence agencies, they all use it, you know, to push these narratives on us. And the militaries and governments do, the presidents and governments do.
Yep.
They know, like, they're trying to program you through that channel.
Right. But this time is a little bit different, because information is very hard for them to control. Imagine living back like 30 years ago, where you got all of your news from,
sure,
like a newspaper, or you got all of your news from an actual like video on TV,
sure,
where you had to go to the news channel. At that point, imagine what people are thinking there, and they're like, it's an echo chamber. It's a real echo chamber at that time period.
Sure.
Now you get a little bit discernment, but I'm still seeing people believe propaganda on both sides, and they're not asking critical questions of like, okay, where are the nuances here? Now,
that's such a great point, because people, you're just right, I'll let you continue, they don't ask questions at all.
No,
go ahead.
They don't.
It's like a headline. It's what
I mean, look, as soon as the 10-point peace plan came out and Trump agrees, you got to read the words that he said. What was the exact wording? He said, agreeable terms that we can work with, or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
We received a 10-point peace proposal from Iran and believe it is a workable basis on which to negotiate.
Right. So the word workable basis does not mean that they agree to everything that is in there.
Right.
And so then you just look at one side and they're like, America lost. Trump conceded. Right. Iran is the winner and the victor. No. It's not that simple. Right. It's not that simple. But I wanted to go back to that clip before we come to break, is the video of them calling for the Iranian people to rally. Yeah, the state TV. This is a level of them galvanizing the people together. And probably mute the audio and we'll just read the subtitles, because it's in
that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's not in English. Go ahead and roll that if you guys have it. Number 5.
Tomorrow around the country, power plants, young human chain circles will be formed. Alaa Rahmi, the Secretary of Supreme Youth Council, after suggestions from the people, has invited creative, athletic, and cultural faces to join this human chain near power plants at 2 p.m. I invite all the youth, athletes, artists, students, faculties. Tomorrow, Tuesday at 2 p.m.
And that's good enough.
To be at near power plants, which are investments regarding of political beliefs. We'll read a little bit more. Gather around. These are our wealth of belongings. Okay, cut back to us. And do we have the video of them actually doing
it? Yeah, we have the video. That's number six. You can go ahead and play the response. People took it serious.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get Americans to, you know, maybe surround the McDonald's, prevent it from being destroyed.
Now, but you know what? I think about it. If it was our country being attacked, it wouldn't matter which side of the aisle you were on. People would rally. I mean, there's still a sense of nationalism at the end of the day here.
Sure. Well, it's different because the United States government, what it engages in is terrorism. Okay. So like these people going out there, oh, it's so crazy. They're surrounding the power plant. Well, the power plant shouldn't be getting hit anyway.
Yeah.
Like it really is cause and effect. You have the response from the theocratic regime, which is a response to the evil empire. So like it's really gross.
Yeah. So, and I'm not going to turn this into a debate. The word, like, I'm seeing people throw the word terrorism a lot. And I know, like, we're looking at the textbook definition of like what that means. I don't condone the things that we're doing. I don't think we should have been doing the double tap on the school and those types of things. But like, you know, we're making the word tied to something that's like extremism. And I know Trump is pretty extreme right now.
Terrorism is military action or like criminal military action to like enforce, like to try to like get a population to comply with something through fear.
Yeah,
like,
no,
that,
and
that's what I agree. Infrastructure.
But countries have done this forever on both sides, no matter which country you looked at. Like terrorism is just kind of like the extreme end of it. Like I know
I view targeting civilians as terrorism. Like deliberately targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure is terrorism. Like when they blow up that bridge, if there are Iranian tanks going across that bridge, if there's an army going across that bridge, that's a legitimate target. Yeah. But just because something might happen in the future because we say so doesn't give us the reason to commit murder. And that's just my position.
No, and I agree with
you. The Geneva suggestion, perhaps?
Yeah, no, and I agree with you on that. It's just, I don't want us to get so far here in America that we're like, we're anti-war, we're anti against the things that we're doing, but I don't hate my country. And so the rhetoric starts coming out almost swings the pendulum too far. That's the problem that's happening in society. We're swinging the pendulum to extremes back and forth.
I'm pretty tired of the government, to be honest with you, but I love my country. And this is the thing, like we're talking about the military. We're never talking about the people that are actually serving, actually involved. It's just the thing is it's a tool of the country. It's Uncle Sam's tool. It's Uncle Sam who uses it. So that's who you got to criticize. We're going to be right back. We got more news and breaking information. Got a phenomenal deep dive. One of my favorites talking about the African gold trade and precious metals and all of it. Going to be getting into that.
Yeah. Democratic Republic of the Congo. A lot of stuff happening. These are stories that are underreported. We're going to be covering that because a lot of the stuff gets covered from Iran, and it is something that's actively ongoing.
It's another example of America helping out. Okay, and we're going to get into Uncle Sam helping out. We also got Amy Dangerfield, joining us here in the third hour. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. I want to let you know right now, thealexjonesstore.com, your place to get all the best vitamins, minerals, nutritional supplements, anything you need. We love you. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins, going to be back here in a second.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it and you like it and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigly, our sponsor, has a really high quality private label, top selling brand that we were able to private label. We're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high quality zeolite. Please do your own research. and then go to theoliveshowstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Enter Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick. Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bolivine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite detox formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners, the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now please visit theoliveshowstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber, lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time. So all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs. Cancel any time. $30 a month. Get $40 to spend in the store. Special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything at theoliveshowstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your Zeolite formula now at theoliveshowstore.com. The big health guy, you're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade to take 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work. Tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
Want to remind you guys how grateful we are to have you joining us here on the network today. We love doing the American Journal. The American Journal, it's our final week here on Friday, so these shows mean a lot to us. Rex Jones here with Tim Tompkins. We're getting into all the latest news. We've got something breaking right now. Tim, what's going on?
Yeah, so Pentagon did a briefing this morning, folks.
Ooh,
and,
Admiral Drunkie.
Yeah, Pete Hegseth is out there giving the press briefing. That happened at, I think, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. But we're going to go and play this clip. It's the first that we've heard out of the government. So let's go ahead and roll a little bit of that, and we'll do some commentary on it after.
Chance of death to America, targeting our people, killing Americans, lying and blackmailing their way toward a nuclear weapon, so they thought. No longer. Not on our watch. Other presidents marked time and kicked the can down the road. President Trump made history. From the strike that took out Qasem Soleimani to tearing up the disastrous Obama-Iran deal, to the precision campaign that obliterated Iran's nuclear sites in Operation Midnight Hammer, to the decisive military victory we just achieved in Operation Epic Fury. No other president has shown the courage and resolve of this commander-in-chief. President Trump forged this moment. Iran begged for this ceasefire, and we all know it. As the president truthed this morning, a big day for world peace.
He's kind of talking a little weird.
Iran wants it to happen.
This is real.
They've had enough. Operation Epic Fury was a historic and overwhelming victory on the battlefield. A capital V military victory. By any measure, Epic Fury decimated Iran's military and rendered it combat ineffective for years to come. You see, in less than 40 days, one of our combatant commands, Central Command, CENTCOM, using less than 10% of America's total combat power, dismantled one of the world's largest militaries. The world's leading state sponsor of terrorism proved utterly incapable of defending itself.
All right, pause it.
Its people or its territory.
Pause it. We got to pause it. Okay, so it proved utterly incapable of defending itself. Okay, what about the dead Americans? What about the plane that got shot down? What about why the war stopped? Because I thought we were going to win this 24, 48 hours. Okay? Well, I mean, clearly that's a lie.
No, it's a lie. I mean, remember, we read this is the U.S.'s response. Then we read Iran's response. They both have high levels of propaganda. He said Iran begged for this deal, right? But then Iran is also saying, no, America was on its hands and knees and asked us to come to the negotiation table. But we decided, we'll let this happen. I mean, like, this is what's happening on both sides. And so you guys should not be pray fall to, like, the propaganda on either side here. Okay.
True.
Each side wants to make themselves feel like they're doing better than they actually are. Because if we look at the facts, we've suffered significantly in terms of the billions of dollars that we've lost. Also the strait being closed and the economic damage that's happened there. But Iran has actually had a ton of its military decimated in terms of its assets.
Sure.
It's going to be dealing with those impacts for a very long time as well. So they've both clobbered each other over the head at this point.
All right, we'll go back to it.
Yeah.
We untied just a fraction of our strength, and Iran suffered a devastating military defeat. Together with our Israeli partners, America's military achieved every single objective on plan, on schedule, exactly as laid out from day one. Iran's Navy is at the bottom of the sea, whether it's the Soleimani class, their frigate class, their prized drone aircraft carriers, submarines, mine layers sunk. Iran's air force has been wiped out. Iran no longer has an air defense, any sort of a comprehensive air defense system. We own their skies. Their missile program is functionally destroyed. Launchers, production facilities, and existing stockpiles depleted and decimated. And almost completely ineffective. Iran shot hundreds and hundreds of missiles and one-way attack drones at our aircraft carrier. They were obsessed with it, and they never got even close. Every single one of those shots easily shot down miles and miles away from the Abe Lincoln. They were blowing ammo.
I thought it got hit or some damage that put it out of commission. Was it the fire or was it... Was that an excuse? Remember there was a fire?
Tim, we didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. Of course, you're correct. Of course, you're correct. They're gaslighting.
Gaslighting.
Wow. Go back.
Okay, you can go back.
Fantasy land. Contrast that with most significantly, in last night's wave of more than 800 strikes, we finished completely destroying Iran's defense industrial base, a core pillar of our mission objective. What little they have left buried in bunkers is all they will have. They can still shoot. We know that. Their command and control is so decimated they can't really talk and coordinate. So they still may shoot here and there, but that would be very, very unwise. But they can no longer build missiles, build rockets, build launchers, or build UAVs. Their factories have been razed to the ground, set back in historic fashion. You see, had Iran refused our terms, The next targets would have been their power plants, their bridges,
war crime,
and
war crime.
Oil and energy infrastructure. Targets they could not defend and could not realistically rebuild. It would have taken them decades.
Pause
and
it.
We were locked and loaded.
Okay, the same is true for all the Gulf countries, right? So, we could do this and bomb them back to the Stone Age. They could do that to global energy infrastructure forever. Yeah. Okay,
Their goat hood is over there. You know, they're a bunch of retards, a bunch of inbred. He married his sister. Come on!
And it's like, no. Have you seen the Shahid? Have you seen what these drones are able to do?
No, they would be capable. And here's the thing. Not everybody shows the ace up their sleeve.
Sure.
So they probably have capacity to do just as much damage in certain aspects. And we don't want that. And that's what I was afraid of.
Sure.
And I see a lot of people warmongering online, and you got the Mark Levin's arguing, I'm not a warmonger.
Yes, you are. I'm not crazy. You're crazy.
Yeah. And it's like, yes, you are. Here's the thing. Escalation is going to end badly for everybody. And we've been seeing this thing play out. If we were to bomb the infrastructure, it's still on the table. I kid you not. I guarantee you, even after 2 weeks, Rex, we're going to be back into this conflict. That is my prediction.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that to be the case. We want to be proven wrong, but.
I think he took the easy way off because you had all the civilians. But that 2 week mark hits.
Ooh, we got Mark Levin saying these 10 points are an absolute disaster. That's how you know it's a good plan.
Yeah, I mean, look, could we play the clip of him?
Yes.
Sorry, it's right above the Pentagon briefing. It's, I'm not a warmonger. That's, him. And I've seen him in videos prior to saying some completely outlandish things.
Oh, he's crazy.
Yeah.
You're all good.
So, I mean, look. What do you think when you see Pete up there signaling?
He's tap dancing. He's doing the tap dance. I think he's doing as good a job as he could be expected to do. But ultimately, when this is looked back in like the months and years and decades to follow, they're going to look at this administration as a total clown college. This did not work out well.
Well, here's the thing that I'm thinking right now. After this administration and the previous one, it's going to be very hard for Americans to ever believe anything that comes out of the government's mouth.
Right.
Because you just look at, people are keeping the receipts. You just go on X. People are making montages of people saying one thing and then a previous statement they've made in the past. And it's very easy for people to line that up. Whereas 20 years ago, people weren't doing that and they weren't as chronically on the internet. So a lot of stuff just got forgotten.
Yeah, but I think that's fair to say. Let's go to the Levin clip now.
I trust President Trump. I know his heart. I know he wants to do the right thing. I know he has Lilliputians who are telling him to do something else. I know he has other advisors telling him to do something else. He's the most understanding, competent of the bunch. And he's the president of the United States. And his instincts are very, very good.
I love his instincts.
But I would say this enemy is still the enemy. They're still surviving. Their military may be destroyed, but the communist Chinese will still help them. The Russians will still help them to rebuild. And so this thing's not over. And it's not that I'm a warmonger. It's that they're a warmonger. It's not that I'm an interventionist. They're an interventionist.
Well, you see, Rex, sometimes I get the knee pads out.
That's
and
right.
I gotta say, I just love President Trump. I just wake up every morning and I just pray to God, you bless Trump.
No, you don't. You haven't misunderstood. Trump's the bottom. Trump puts on the knee pad. Okay, so like you got it all messed up, my friend. You don't see what's really, like, that's the brain. That's like Plankton driving SpongeBob. Like that's literally the brain right there. And look at that. That's art.
There's Laura Loomer lurking in the corner.
There's
there.
Loomer. You got Misfit Patriot. You got Lindsey Graham whispering in the ear. Then you got Levin. Ooh.
We could do Iwo Jima, President Trump.
That's right. We could do Iwo Jima. We could do this. I'm so glad that it looks like he didn't listen to Lindsey Graham. Aren't you?
I'm so glad.
And like, here's the thing. I can be a war criminal. But, like, kudos to you, feather in your cap. Just please, like, just no more of this.
Well,
please.
They, here, what started scaring me is when they started firing everybody, which made me believe that every single person right. that got fired was somebody who was going against the narrative or just
yeah, not wanting the expansion of the war.
Right?
Yeah.
So, do you think that the people who are now in position, even after this 2 weeks, are going to make the right choices?
That's a tough question, man. I don't know. I don't know. We could be looking at, just a delayed reaction, you know, and that's still happening. That's what we're worried about.
Well, if you don't have Israel coming to the table with Iran and Lebanon, then there's no way that after this whole conflict it ends, because if they're still lobbing missiles, Israel's going to be like, help us, help right. us.
Well, let's say they reach some sort of theoretical peace deal. What counts as a violation of that deal if they're using American munitions to bomb Lebanon, if they're using American munitions to do these, strike Iran, God knows what, the Israelis might just feel like they can continue to do stuff. They're going to be able to drag us back in just like the first time.
Right.
Yeah. But I think in the Iranian statement, they say they figured out it wouldn't work after 10 days. I think that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't work. You can't bomb a country of 92 million people into submission.
No, you can't. And then we've got also videos of, like, what, Jesse Waters? We never played that.
Oh, yeah, let's go to clip one.
Let's go to clip one, because Jesse Waters.
He's talking about the ceasefire here.
You know how he loves his war videos, man.
He does crazy, cool propaganda, okay? He's talented at doing it. We're going to watch Jesse Waters now. It's clip one.
Trump just got Iran to cry uncle. They've been calling him crazy for making threats, but guess the threats worked. The Strait's on its way to being opened, and Iran's promising to stop firing missiles and drones. The next 24 hours will be the test. If oil tankers start sailing through, we're on our way to officially ending this and hitting the president's six-week time frame. If they play games, back to bridge and power plant day. The mullahs should know better. Their economy's in a depression. Heavy industry like steel, petrochemicals, and their military-industrial complex have been obliterated.
All right, pause it.
People were already taking to the...
You see how this is literally the mafia?
Yeah, people are
going to make a deal with you, but you know, we got to figure out during this critical period, it's still going to be, you know, burn down your shop day if you don't, like, get in bed with us.
Well, what I was going to say about Jesse Waters is, I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but remember when Tucker Carlson was on the network, I used to look at him almost like you look at Jesse Waters and how he just, like, has the puppet. Like, I love New Tucker, right? Because he's out of that system where they make you.
Sure.
So do you think that Jesse Waters would ever, like, if he ever left Fox, would he ever have, like, some more moderate positions, or do you think
Waters is a political mercenary? I used to listen to Jesse Waters do man on the street interviews. He used to be like Tucker's guy, and they would do like a 20-minute correspondent report where he would be on the street. What do you think of the hot dog? And then, like, that would be the question. And now he's kind of taken Tucker's spot.
Yeah,
he's
like,
he's that kind
he
of
he is that guy.
He's that edgy kind of John Stewart type of dude. I mean, maybe he's gonna stay at Fox. That guy's a Fox News creation.
No, you're so, right.
There you go.
But I love what Tucker's doing. And then I know we
got more.
What?
We got more of the clip.
Oh, we do? That's not over.
Yeah, well, let's play a little.
Oh, let's
bit
keep
more
watching it.
Economic crisis. And now it's 10 times worse. All morning, we were peppering their crown jewel, Karg Island. That's something Iran can't afford to lose. And our B-52s are already on their way to theater today, but Iran had no choice. The New York Times is also reporting China begged the Iranians to take the deal, saying their economy couldn't take it anymore. The regime was backed into a corner, and the president believed that sending in soldiers to open up the strait and seize Karg wouldn't be wise and was a last resort.
Pause it.
So what's next? 2 weeks of peace talk.
Okay, so keep in mind, we don't want this to happen. When I say this, I really don't want this to happen. 2 weeks go by, this all doesn't work out. What are clips gonna look like? You know, like, oh, it's a last resort. We look like a bad idea to do this. When he does it, they'll be like, oh, it's great. They'll be like, oh, it's the most fantastic thing you've ever seen. Whereas we don't want it to happen anyway, so whether it happens or doesn't happen, we're just saying, good. Like, just please just don't happen, period. You know?
Well, that's why independent needs to continue, because this is a dying brand. Yes. I don't think people can keep subscribing to
literally a dying brand.
Yeah, you can just hear the rhetoric. You can hear the spin on it. And then I'm going to say the same thing. I go on CNN and it's the same crap. Like, yeah. You know, they're like, Trump is the worst man in the world and we hate him. And America is this and America is that. And it's like
sure.
Liberal and transgender. It's like, okay, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, let's cover the real news without adding these spins. Like, why are the spins necessary? Well, I've just thought about, like, why do they feel the need to do that?
A lot of people don't get excited by information. A lot of people get excited by feeling like they have some sort of relationship with the political figure that they're a fan of, right? So the spin is kind of like the flavor that you ascribe to whatever political faction or party or person that you're loyal to, right? So that's what the spin is, because the spin benefits either the government or a political party or whatever. You get what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying.
Whereas like a show like this, where like I might have strong opinions, I have ideology I stick to, you have ideology you stick to, maybe we have loyalties there. We don't have loyalties based with people.
No.
Come on!
And
ridiculous.
No, and the best part about InfoWars, and this is me coming from the outside, now coming
tell
in.
Tell them about it.
There is nobody that comes in, tells you what to do,
yep.
What to say,
yep.
How you need to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like you come in and it's like, okay, you report on what you want to do.
That's right.
And how you want to spin it. And then, you know, the audience can judge based off of that. You
right.
Know, there's no yes men running around here. Everyone has their own independent thought. And that is the exact ideology that I see that's why your father created this.
You think about it. Right. And we literally come in here and do a phenomenal 3-hour show for you guys. Someone like Jesse Waters, someone like Laura Ingraham, someone like Sean Hannity, they have like 20 writers. They have like 20 interns that like run around for them. They probably like attack them with chains and stuff. Like God knows how they treat these people. Okay. Like Roger Ailes at Fox News was like apparently allegedly throwing women out of windows. So that's wow. A joke. That's a joke. Whatever. I think he got sued or whatever. So pure speculation there. But the thing is like we come in here and we just do a genuine original show. And how are they supposed to compete with that? Because I have to have them tell me what
that
say.
Wasn't right wing enough.
That's right.
Go back and give me some better slop.
Yeah, like how are you actually supposed to find like the actual core of the identity of what you want to present to the audience if someone else is telling you what to think, what to present, and what to do?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it.
You can't do it, right?
It's impossible.
Now, we also do, what is this, Israel, countdown clock? Sorry. Like them sitting around like it was the Super Bowl.
Yes.
I remember that. Okay, can we play clip number 3? I wasn't expecting this, but, I guess this is where we're at in today's society. Let's go ahead and play clip number 3 here.
Okay, and we don't need audio on it. It's fine. It's just them jibber jabbering, and I don't speak the language. I don't understand.
Arabic or Hebrew. I didn't even see Trump's face in the corner there.
Yeah, but look, like they're like, well, like we're just waiting for the bombs to fly. We're just hanging out, and like we're not enjoying this. Okay, we want this all to stop. Everyone that takes some sort of sick pleasure in this, I'm a civilian. I'm a news person. I'm not involved. You are involved. Like if you're sitting in that studio, you're engaged in warfare because you're manufacturing consent.
Yeah, you are manufacturing consent. I also, yesterday, I was like, for the people who love this war so much, because I saw some people really pushing hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Trump, do it. Hit the infrastructure. Send them to the Stone Age. I want to see women and children crying. I want it all. And I'm like, here's a sign up for the military. We're kind of short on personnel.
Yeah, I retweeted that. I like that.
I was like, here's the link. Go sign up for the military because they need more personnel. If you love this war so much, go and join it.
Yeah. And like that's totally fair to say.
And it's just a bunch of keyboard warriors, man.
Right.
That's why I have to take a break from X sometimes because it's just keyboard warriors just like, and it's like, come on, man. Do you even have a real position here? Do you have something that you stand on that's like your own ideology where you at least just question something just an ounce?
It's actually scary how much people don't care and how much people think it's actually just funny. And this is all like a big ha-ha joke. And not to talk about it every day, but the discussion we had on stream with Jeremy, like, it's not funny and cool anymore to be like, oh, well, it's just good. Things are going to get worse. This is just how things happen. No, like it's sick. It's sickness.
And the Israel TV, it called it civilization collapse. That was the name there.
That's nice. Another word for that's genocide. You know, genocide's wiping out a civilization or a people or making them unrecognizable. That's quite fun, right? And then the big win, the big own is that we didn't do it.
And yeah. Like, it is a big win. Like, it is. Like, it is a white pill. The ceasefire has happened or appears to have happened. But we can't, these people are like, if I go around and I kill 10 people and then, you know, I take a break for doing it for 6 months, I'm suddenly now like I can become, you know, the mayor of the city, the principal of the school, you know, the president of the U.S. That's not how it works. Like, you did the crime.
You did the crime.
Right. So like, this has to be addressed. And even if the crime is just the spending of money, they were spending $11,500 a second.
A second.
You hear about this?
Well, now, we can't afford healthcare, man. We can't afford, childcare, you know?
Can we look up how many seconds are in the, time period of the last just 2 weeks? We'll just say last 2 weeks. How many seconds are there in 2 weeks?
Oh, you're just doing multiplier there.
Yeah. I'm Grug, no do good math. Grug brain, no work. So definitely going to need a little bit of help from the crew there. But you think about it, they're telling us that we can't solve the homeless veteran issue. Okay, I think there's like 35,000 homeless veterans.
Yeah.
You can't give all of them 11 grand? You see what I'm saying?
You could.
And that's literally a drop in the bucket. That's just the money that they spent initially. They're already trying to get, and they're still trying to pass this through, because keep in mind, Trump says the wars of the future, another $200 billion for the military, plus the $1.5 trillion new budget next year.
Yeah, and that expanded our defense.
Yeah.
But then we're building the Golden Dome here, like expecting China to launch missiles at the United States.
The Golden Dome is what Trump gives Netanyahu.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's what Trump gives Netanyahu, that Golden Dome, okay?
To test it out, but it costs.
And here's the figure for you. We could have given 1,210,000 people 11 grand, over 11 grand. Okay, we could have given over 1 million people that money. We could have ended homeless veterans 30, 40, 50 times over.
Yep.
But instead of doing that, and they can do that at any point going forward in the future, they can just make that decision. Oh, the inflation, oh, we'll never agree. BS. Okay, literally, Trump farted out $50 billion.
Trump, it needs to go to the states. The states need to handle it.
It's actually a very complicated issue, and this needs rigorous debate. We need to make sure the funds are allocated in the correct way. Shut up, retard! Just give all the veterans 11 grand. Because if you can do the damn war, you can give them the money, right? Like, this is proven.
Why do you think Doge didn't work out? Because it dipped into somebody who was making money.
Ooh, okay.
And you messed up their cash flow.
Right.
And so they don't get to fly around in the fancy jets anymore if you start giving veterans
all that money. The thing is, they still get to fly around in the fancy jet, Tim. They don't want anybody else to have a good quality of life. But we want you to have a good quality of life. We want you to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what we've always talked about here on the network. I want to tell you guys right now, we got a sale, methylene blue tincture sale, 72% off subscription to $16.79 a month when you subscribe and save. Here's the thing. If you're taking methylene blue, a lot of the callers that call in say, I stopped taking it for a month, for like 3 months, for 6 months, I want to start taking it again. Just subscribe and save so you won't forget. 72% off when you get the subscription, locked in for life as long as you stay subscribed. This deal will not last long, and I just want to remind you, we got the new InfoWars cooler bundle. That's $99.99, regular $145.99. You're saving $46, 31% off. VIP members pay $79.99, get the InfoWars ultimate portable cooler and a bunch of treats and goodies inside as well. And we still got the rolling sale. See y'all next segment.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley about 7-8 months ago came out with this top of the line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, for $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249. But guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First tactical trench knife. It's badass. America First t-shirt, MK Ultra atomic defense supplements, Shilajit gummy, Shilajit capsules, Irish CMOS capsules, Warcry premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down. Once we can't do it, we have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of a limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass, and it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds. We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
You know, these revelations of that elites at a very high level, and we actually know the basic number of them as well, are doing human trafficking, human rape, and human sacrificing of children because they're the closest to God. And when I like read this, I mean, it's unthinkable. Like, you don't want to believe it, and so I mention it on Joe Rogan, but I also mentioned that I was starting an AI company. And what shocked me is after the show, more people wanted to talk about the AI thing, and more people were upset about, you know, that I was starting an AI company than they were about, you know, this nightmare of elites eating babies.
It's the first time since 2012. First time since 2012 that there are no British actors nominated for Best Actor or Best Actress. Yeah, British spokesperson said, yeah, well, at least we arrest our pedophiles. So, you got that going for you.
And so then I started thinking about why is this happening? Like, and I mean, we've seen people who have spoken about it, who have, you know, who have participated in it and who have left, you know, it's an initiation that you go through to become, it's a confidence initiation that you go through to become part of a team. And that's when I realized that this is not something that's unique to the elites, that human nature involves these kinds of hazing initiations, or else we wouldn't see it happening since childhood.
Andrew Breitbart, I'm quoting you, in a newspaper interview he gave last year discussing the people who run Hollywood, quote, yes, quote, I'm telling you, they're uninteresting, they're vicious, they're vitriolic, they're really, really not good people, and I'm willing to say that on the record, close quote. Is there any of that that you regret?
No.
What makes them really, really not good people?
Well, I'm not saying the entirety, but the ones who have controlled Hollywood for the last 40 years, that quote could be attributed to the campus left as well. It could be attributed to people who are in charge in Venezuela right now. Anywhere where the left gets control, you start to see political correctness run amok. You start seeing dissenting views quashed. They use projection right before they do so. They start attacking the people that they're about to go after of being guilty of the very things that they do.
And lesser magic, which the Satanists do, they'll tell you, they show the thing in play before they do. They believe it makes it happen, and it gives it more power once they do it. And then you have the Podesta plan that if Trump won, they would actually do this and have the military turn against Trump, but now they've tried it. It's not an endorsement of Trump. He's doing some things I don't like right now. The point is they are literally pre-programming this and admitting it.
Yeah, and they're willing it into happening, and they're showing everyone an example of what it would be. So that, again, the revelation of the method, you see what's there, and it makes it okay for it to happen. And it's a form of also of predictive programming.
I do it too. He cut you off on another subject. Elaborate, because I've studied the Graham Grimoires, black magic, all that stuff to understand these people. They talk about, you have to show them, you have to tell them, that's metaphysical rule. It also gets them ready. And then it makes it even more powerful when you actually do it. And then you realize that they're doing this I mean, speak to that if you can.
Well, we live in a universe of mind. And the one thing I've started to realize is that these kind of forms of spells, this magic is real. When you believe something enough, you create a reality.
Yeah, we call it a spell. What it is a narrative to control your mind, and we can build incredible things. So it's a program.
It is a program. You select it, you project it, you expect it, and then you collect it. It's the spec method, and it actually works. And so people who are using it for, you know, there's good spells and bad spells, and there's spells that are promoting humanity, and then there's spells that...
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them.
Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly, with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Back to you, second hour of the American Journal. I want to let you know right now, breaking news, they are hitting the hell out of Hezbollah in Lebanon and the civilian populations as well. There's some crazy footage coming out of that that we're also going to cover later on in the hour. Tim Tompkins with the incredible deep dive. Really appreciate you breaking it down, Tim. What do we have going on in Africa?
Okay. You know, this is my favorite part of the show, the deep dive. This is where I get to get into the specifics. We've been covering a lot about things that have happened here in America. I wanted to open this up to the wider world.
Right.
And there's a lot of underreported stories. There's a lot of things that are happening around the world that people don't know what's going on. And one of those places is the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Right.
And that has been a region that has been plagued with war after war after war. I think they've been in conflicts for almost like 30 plus years.
Right. And this is one of the things Trump said he fixed.
Yeah.
That we're going to get into.
So if you guys have ever heard him say, I solved seven wars. This is one of the wars that he's referring to. I'm not sure what the other six were, but this one was definitely one of the seven that he was referring to. And so we got to start here. So, you know, Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo have been locked into a conflict that's tied to rebels and control of the Eastern Congo for decades. And so Trump has hosted both leaders and pushed this deal through. And you can see that on the screen. This is him signing like some temporary peace deal, but it's not that simple. But like, here's a quick breakdown. So Rwanda is supposed to pull its troops out of the Congo. Congo is supposed to crack down on anti-Rwandan rebel groups. Both sides stop backing the militias, and then the U.S. is supposed to oversee the pressure and keep both sides sticking to it. And that's just the surface version, but there's more things. And the real story is not just about this handshake that's happening in Washington, but why the conflict, it never ends, and why the U.S. has just suddenly decided we're going to come in here and just save everybody and stop this war, you know? And so why does the U.S. care? The U.S. cares because you got to understand why they're paying attention. There's four aspects to this, right? We've got critical minerals. So East Congo holds cobalt, copper, tin, tungsten, and tantalum, which are like, those are core materials for EVs. And they've got smartphones, AIs, military data, tech. All of those things are controlled with those types of ingredients. Then you have China that dominates these supply chains today. And so the U.S. is also trying to take a shot at breaking their dominance over those regions. Second thing is they want to contain the chaos. The region has been one of the deadliest conflict zones on the earth for decades. And so this kind of means less, refugees that are coming out of that. The third thing that we care about is it's another like diplomatic win. Like we're talking about, like the U.S. gets influence and leverage, but then also
Trump's trying to like pad his record.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, I mean, this was him.
And it's a good thing too, but
it is a good thing. But yeah, remember, cause he really wanted that Nobel Peace Prize.
I am the peace president.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
So this was one of the things that he was using to kind of to position himself for it. And then he just wants to keep Rwanda and Congo aligned with Washington, because remember, where there are power vacuums, there's the ability for, quote unquote, the enemy, China and Russia, to step into those regions. And again, when you have such a rich country with such extensive resources, you don't want that to fall into the enemy hands. So let's talk about Rwanda. We'll actually show where it is on a map. Let's go ahead and pull that map up so people can see. So you can see it's kind of like in the center. It is massive.
It's huge.
Okay. It is a very big, country. It actually is, almost the size of Europe. If I've got that graphic up there for number two, we can show the comparison between, the DRC and Europe. You're just going to see, look, it covers pretty much all of Europe, minus Spain and Portugal, but like it just puts it in perspective. And so the Congo didn't just start as a normal country. It actually started as the European powers in the late 1800s came in and started projecting their power under this Belgian king. And so
King Leopold II.
Huh?
King Leopold II.
I don't remember the guy's name.
It has to be King Leopold. And this is a guy that I believe was known for, I think he killed like 2 million people. I think he was the guy who was like, oh, I'll chop off your arm or your leg.
They did a lot.
Yeah.
In that region. And there's a lot of things that they don't cover as much in history. And so the system was just built for one purpose. They wanted to
monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy's evil. Go ahead.
Belgium was rich because it went into Africa, and they went in, they pulled resources, they extracted the wealth, and they basically left nothing behind for the people. And let's go ahead and play this video that's going to show down how the Europeans went in, carved up parts of Africa, and just did resource extraction. Okay, let's go ahead and roll that.
This image that we've sort of doctored up to make it a little bit more immersive, this is European leaders inventing countries in Africa in the late 1800s, carving up this map, looking for resources. And the Congo was one of the many inventions of Europeans.
Congo was created actually as the private fiefdom of a Belgian king in 1885. And so the whole purpose of the Congolese state was always to extract from the local population. It was never to create a government or a state that provides public services or public goods, including security.
The Belgians mapped it and discovered just how many valuable resources the place had. The most valuable at the time was rubber, and it led to one of the most brutal colonial exploitation campaigns in history.
It's got an enormous amount of natural resources. Congo is geological scandal is what Congolese call it. It's the largest producer of copper in Africa. It's the largest producer of cobalt. It's one of the largest producers of diamonds, tungsten, tantalum, tin. You go down the list. They have it. The uranium used for Hiroshima and Nagasaki came from the Congo. Like a lot of Belgium's wealth came from Congolese mines.
Again, go watch part three of that series if you want a deeper dive. So the most important part of this section of the story is that Belgium didn't build a country out of Congo. They built a pipeline for resources to Europe. The roads and railways led from mines and plantations to ports, not between cities. It created ethnic groups and tribal identities and then played them off each other so that they could conquer them, but also, in the process, sowing the seeds for future conflict and division.
That deep history really is important, understanding where we are today, because a lot of the habits and the trends and the logics of the state sort of persist until today.
Some of the structural issues to Congo is still facing, moving from bad governance, destructured army, lack of a sustainable policy, that is actually where we can see to with some of these trends.
Okay, so before I continue with this, I had a train of thought and I want to bounce this off of you.
Sure.
So we just see this a lot with the European powers, what they did in the past. And, you know, it just jogs my memory that they did this with a lot of countries, not just in Africa, but across the world. Right. And you had this play out in India. You had this play out in Southern America. And so they Middle East. They did this divide and conquer. And what you're seeing now, and this is just eye opening because as I've been researching and understand, a lot of the stuff that you're seeing where there's like these generational conflicts, arguments, people like going to war with each other and the destabilization comes a lot from this time period.
Sure.
Right?
Well, and that's the thing. And we look at the project going on right now with Israel, with the colonial project there. It's literally, you can talk about what's happened in America, maybe like 100 or 200 years ago. You have people here that have been trained to like recognize colonialism, especially on the left. And you look at what's going on over there. It's literally an imperial project.
Well, it was, right?
Yeah.
Because, and not to diverge from the deep dive here, but if you go to Israel and Palestine and all of that, that was something that happened when Britain was still kind of in its last dying era. It was still in that power position where it promised the land to two people.
To speak, Navy, I think I understand the point that you were making earlier. To speak to what you're saying, we have an area where you have Jewish people, or Arabs, whatever, just living in peace. And then suddenly it doesn't just become a place people live. It becomes the British mandate of Palestine.
Yes.
You draw lines around
draw
it.
Draw lines
you
around
cut it up and you make these decisions. And then that... We see the ramifications centuries later from stuff like that all around the world. I mean, Africa, like the people living there, they didn't get a say in what the continent was going to be.
Yes. And you've probably heard of the Kurds, right?
Sure.
The Kurdish people, they've got like 40 million people.
The U.S. has faked them out numerous times.
Right. I mean, everybody's used
them. We're going to give you a state. Ooh.
But I did a whole article on this on the newsletter that we have, and it was the same thing playing out there too.
Right.
Britain and the colonialists went in, carved up these regions, and they didn't leave the state for the Kurdish people. They just said, well, you know, Iran looks like this, Iraq looks like this, and then we'll keep Turkey like this, and then we'll... And so you just see, like, these powers are just dictating everything across the world, and we have conflict after conflict. People don't even remember the history to know why they're fighting in the beginning. Right?
True.
So you just see these things play out for hundreds of years, and the true people that had bad intentions never get punished, and it's always down the line. And so we have to get out of these cycles, and that's why, you know, you see Europe today, their economy's dying, Rex.
Yes.
They have no ability because they're no longer able to do the resource extraction that they were able to do before.
Right.
And so there's only but so many countries left that are willing to deal with this type of mentality, which is why you're seeing more people trying to compete for those last dying resources.
Well, the thing is, like, people are like, why would we just surrender to you and give you everything when the stuff that we have is the stuff that powers your entire civilization?
Right, right.
So that they actually want, like, a seat at the table.
Yes, they want a seat at the table. And so, I mean, pretty much when the Britain and all of these countries went in, the Belgians went in, they basically left a weak central authority, no real infrastructure, deep ethnic divisions. They created artificial races for them to compete against each other.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about the Houthis and the Tutsi. I'm messing up maybe the names of the tribes, but what happens is I think they put the Houthis in charge and they killed all the Tutsis.
Yep.
And that's like, and now the area is depopulated and they control it. And it's all planned. It's all planned out. It's a system of control. Because the British people, the Dutch, they figured out, okay, we can send 1,000 people to a region, and if we figure out what languages the people speak, what they believe in, who hates each other, we can back both sides against each other, and then come out on top when they're both dead.
Yep. It is sociopathic behavior, but,
sure.
I mean, they figured it out. And so now you have, you know, Rwanda's genocide that's flooded with these armed groups. And so in 1994, you had Rwanda explode into this like genocide. And so armed militias and civilians start fleeing into eastern Congo. And
right.
So it's the exact same extremist groups that were responsible for the killing. And so those fighters, they regroup across Rwanda's borders. Rwanda sees it as like a direct unfinished threat. So Rwanda keeps intervening and invading inside of Congo to go after those people. And so the Congo pushes back. Then it spirals into the two groups where you got Rwanda and Congo fighting each other. And so you had the first Congo War, then you had the second Congo War, and this is called Africa's World War,
Okay.
They had their own world war. But here's the part like most people miss. Over time, Rwanda's involvement in the troops only stopped being about security, right? And then the Eastern Congo is packed with these valuable minerals and backed by rebel groups like M23, which gives Rwanda influence over that territory. So now Rwanda is involved for two reasons. It's not just that security, but it's also mineral access. And so this is a major reason why the eastern part of Congo never sees any type of like, you know, stability. And so let's pull up graphic number three, showing what that East Congo region looks like. It's going to shock you. It just looks like a bunch of mini countries. And you can zoom in on there just a little bit. You just see everything carved up. And it's just all of those blobs are different regions controlled by different militia groups. And you got
to
pay a different
tax. If you're passing through, and we're going to get to that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. But yeah, I mean, look, it's like during those wars, Congo's national army basically falls apart. There's no discipline. There's no structure. So the local villages start creating their own self-defense groups. And so then you see it's not just rebels, but the people are protecting their homes. And so eventually Congo's weak government arms those groups to start fighting the rebels backed by Rwanda. And so this becomes the turning point for the conflict. So once these militias get the weapons, the training, the experience, the taste of local power, they don't want to give it back.
Right.
And so then the weapons that are mostly like Soviet era guns like AK-47s, PKMs, RPKs, RPGs, they're like cheap, they're durable, they're everywhere. And so Congo becomes flooded with the Cold War weapons that never go away.
Right.
So now the war ends on paper, but these groups are staying active and they stay alive because the state can't protect anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The economy's broken, and then fighting becomes the only way to survive. So the armed group become the local authorities by default. And so this is how...
Might makes right.
Yes.
Literally.
Might makes right.
Yeah.
Yes. And so now there's a power vacuum that you have to deal with in a militia ecosystem. And so, you know, it gets worse than that. These militias don't just fight. They actually start running a business.
Oh, okay.
And so... You know, when we look at this, this war starts to turn into like this business model. And, you know, we don't ever have to fathom something like that here in America.
Well, war is a racket, you know, and I think we do fathom it here in America. We're just kind of on the other side of the table. We're kind of the house.
You know? We're kind of the house. And, you know, the rest of the world is watching, but they're also kind of involved. And so this conflict stops being about taking the capital, but, or winning the war. It becomes just extracting value from the territory itself.
Right.
And so you start to realize like, wait, we kind of forgot the whole reason why we're fighting. And it's just generation after generation. So now, to your point, these militias started setting up roadblocks. They started to tax the farmers.
You gotta pay the tax.
They started to take cuts from the mines. They started to control the villages. They started the forced recruitment. And so, you know, the Congo's own soldiers, the own government of Congo, they are now also doing the same thing. And so this underpaid government troops, they start to set up checkpoints. And it just becomes like this Lord of the Flies situation, you know? Like, and that's the part
there ain't no justice out there. All there is like a bunch of rape, bunch of murder, bunch of drugs, like a bunch of kids with AK-47s running around.
Well, and the reason why, like I watch these stories, I read these stories, and these are the moments that I start to, you know, appreciate that the fact that, you know, what America has built in terms of like legal systems and government and police
and
military. Because, you know, if somebody does something wrong to you and steals, you at least have an ability to go after that person, or you like we're getting robbed, you know, silently through a paycheck, but it's not like somebody saying hand up half your belongings to me or I'm going to shoot you in the face.
Exactly.
Right. 100%. So we got to remember not to take things for granted sometimes because it could be worse.
Sure.
You know, you could have been born anywhere else, but you had the privilege of being born in the United States. And I don't say that lightly. I say that for myself as well. We're
very grateful. Yes.
Super grateful. So let's go ahead and play, this next video that's going to show the gold and how it leaves the mines and the traveling that it goes through. Because a lot of these security groups, like we were talking about, it's about the resource extraction and it has its own pipeline. So let's go ahead and roll this clip.
You have millions of people digging for tin, tungsten, and mostly gold, actually.
This is a pit mind or artisanal mind.
This is thousands of young men digging in hillsides, sometimes in terrible conditions, in lots of different pits. They're dotting mostly very remote hillsides in the Eastern Congo.
They work in these harsh conditions, often with little more than shovels, pans, sometimes bare hands, pulling gold from the soil.
These are fairly militarized pits. You'll find soldiers. They'll provide quote-unquote protection and security in exchange for payments.
This is unrefined gold. So it's extracted, maybe it's powder or flakes or a small nugget, and then it starts its journey towards the city. But this journey will cross through the territory of dozens of different groups.
Roadblocks are one feature of the landscape of the Congo, and there are thousands of them.
Roadblocks are everything. So one of these armed groups has a roadblock, and they demand a cut from anyone transporting minerals. If you know the system well and you're well connected, you have relationships, that will help you with these transactions, ensure that they don't get violent.
You go into a little hut and you give them what is expected. There'll be some negotiating back and forth, but you pretty much know what you're going to have to settle for. They'll get some of them.
Now, again, I want to emphasize, this doesn't just happen for gold. You can be stopped for anything. You can be stopped for carrying cattle. You may have to pay just to move through the checkpoint. Again, everything that moves will be taxed.
There could be 50 or 60 of these roadblocks before you get to a major city.
A motorcycle could be taxed a few bucks to pass. If you're a big truck, maybe you're taxed $700 for a single checkpoint. And according to the people we talked to, a lot of these transactions happen without violence. It's the threat of violence that keeps the order going out here where there is no government. Wait a minute. But look, that is a soldier. That is an official Congolese military soldier, like from the government military.
What do you think about that?
Well, they know it's not a threat of violence. They know it's imminent violence if they don't immediately do what is required. Cause like, this is, it's a different world. Now, we sit over here, we're driving around our air conditioned cars, listening to, I don't know, Drake or whatever. And it's just, these people, we need to be grateful for what we got, man.
Yes,
seriously.
We do. Yes, we do. And again, it's like, you know, a lot of these countries, and it's not just specific to Africa, a lot of these countries around the world, like I said, have been plagued by like the bigger power that
came in. Often the richest as well.
Yeah. And it's that resource extraction. Just imagine if every country that had its own resources just traded in the free market with what it had. Imagine what countries would actually be higher up.
Well, that
actually be superpowers compared to what's happening right now.
That's literally the entire thesis of BRICS. That's what BRICS represents, is nations trading based on their own national resources backed by their currency.
Right.
So
now the problem is, and I'm thinking about it critically here, and we're coming up on a break, but I'm thinking about
you
it.
You got here next is, segment. We're good.
Yeah. What I'm thinking about is like they also need to have help in infrastructure to actually extract the resources properly and set up the systems that are necessary for them to have a thriving country. And so when you've put a country back so far for decades and decades and decades, it's like it requires an outside force to come in and help. Now, do you think, you know, America and these Western nations would be so privy to do something like that?
I think the reason why we have these major conflicts is to distract from these minor situations, because if these things weren't going on, then we'd actually, hey, like, what's going on here? How many people are dying in this area? But because you have these world-ending conflicts all the time that are about to happen, it just gets swept under the rug.
Yeah, I mean, like, think about how many times Syria got swept under the rug.
Right, oh, we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that, and the genocide that was happening there, and the
still going on?
And there's genocide that's happening in the cobalt mines in Africa.
Sure.
And people are like dying by the tens of thousands every single day. So it is shocking. And the whole reason why we do these deep dives is just to shed light on things that are not nearly covered as much as they should be covered.
Yes.
And so that you just learn something new each day, because that's the whole point of the show, is like, we want you to come out of this learning something new and be like, okay, I can go and do something with this knowledge.
Yeah, the saying is warts and all. This is humanity, warts and all. This is the stuff that nobody else is going to show you, because it's not fun. It's not fluff. It's not, you know, necessarily a cool thing to talk about, but it's real. You need to know that it's going on. We need to be empowered, because we want to actually change the world, don't we?
Yeah, we want to change the world, and we love every single person out there. We're coming up on a break here, but we appreciate you guys sticking in. We've got another part of the deep dive coming up in a shortly. See you after the break.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now, here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen this with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
The Osama bin Laden studio, which is now Gray Area Talk Studio. It looks a little bit better, but that's us, you know, with our great team, Wes and Damon, controlling things in a virtual room. We just don't have the same resources we have here, and it's so amazing to be able to do a fully produced show. We thank the crew and everybody listening. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins, let's do a deep dive.
Yeah, so, you know, we were just covering, you know, the origins of what's happened and the resource extraction. But the thing that we got to look at is the global markets and the exporting that's happening. So
sure.
More often than not, you're probably using a device or something, or if you bought like a necklace, there's a strong possibility that it's come from this region as well.
I mean, think about the electric cars. I mean, how many of those do we see driving around? That's tons of everything.
Tons of everything. And again, when you're so far and you don't see how the supply chain works, you don't really think about it. It just comes as a finished good there. You don't realize that it's like, you know, built off the backs of like dead bodies.
Yeah, slaves, literally, dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this isn't to like shame anybody. I mean, you're not in control.
We're all complicit
in the system, right? So, you know, Uganda's gold exports, they went from about $500,000 in 2014 to about $2.3 billion in 2023.
Oh!
And Uganda didn't just suddenly discover gold. What happened was the Congo's conflict ended up starting this smuggling system that created the refined and the gold. I mean, it got smuggled in, it got refined, and then it was sold as legitimate. And so that's what you're seeing on this picture here, is once the gold leaves the mine, it passes through dozens of roadblocks and checks, then it gets smuggled into Uganda or Rwanda, then it gets refined, and then it gets shipped to Dubai, and then it's mixed in with clean gold and becomes untraceable. And you just see, like, I mean, how could you know a supply chain and where the origins of these things come from? And so you see that line down there, but then also you had a lot of outside companies, a lot of Western companies and people going into Uganda and setting up shop in a safer region, but taking the resources from the disturbed one. And so you've got gold. It's not just gold, right? You've got tungsten, tantalum, cobalt, all of it flows through the same dirty pipeline. And so this pipeline connects Congo directly to jewelry, electronics, EV batteries, military tech, global finance. And so this conflict just keeps paying for itself. And it almost is like, you almost don't want to fix it, right? Because it's cheaper to not have it fixed. You know, if you have legitimate systems in place and you have real companies that are extracting it properly, and you have to pay people a reasonable wage to do that, then the cost of everything goes up from there.
Right. You could say, well, maybe it leads to a new age of peace and prosperity. They're not interested in the new age of peace and prosperity. They're happy with the old age.
Especially whoever is benefiting for right now. And so let's pull up number five here, because we got to go back why the U.S. is stepping in. This was something that happened a little while back, but this is Trump brokering a peace deal. Let's go ahead and pull up number five here. I should have had you guys print this.
No, it's all good. And just keep in mind, this is one of the stop seven wars.
Yeah. Can you just zoom in on that first part up top? The proposed DRC economic military plan.
U.S. access to strategic minerals, a little bit out. I got it. Okay. Granting U.S. companies extraction and export rights to secure a stable direct supply chain for defense and technology sectors. Two, banana deepwater port development. The DRC proposes granting operational control to U.S. firms, ensuring American oversight of a key African mineral export hub. Three, establishment of a joint strategic mineral stockpile. The DRC is prepared to work with the U.S. to develop a strategic stockpile of Congolese minerals, enhancing U.S. economic and security resilience. Got to get the components to put in the missile somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's always what it's about. Number four, strengthening military cooperation. Ooh, just like we train all the other groups, training and equipping the Congolese armed forces to protect mineral supply routes from foreign backed militant groups, granting the U.S. access military bases in key zones. Oh, we got to build bases, and replacing ineffective peacekeeping from the U.N. with direct U.S. probably mercenaries as well.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, you can look at it however you want. I mean, Trump. You know, this is a win for him in terms of the aspects that he got a pretty good deal out of this for the United States. Now, is it ethical? That's another question, right? But I mean, this should have been one of those things that should have been addressed a while back. But the only thing is it like, do we trust, you know, whoever these corporations that are going in and extracting the resources to do it in a way that actually benefits the region itself?
No.
That's the real equation here.
I just, it's all,
It's all nice that I guess we can make money off of it, but it's still going to be the same evil people. We're probably just going to train them, make them better at doing their job.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is not stepping in out of charity. It's stepping in because the Congo means securing minerals for countering China.
Hey, we're going to make a deal with each other. We're going to have a good time. You know, you're going to let me run your country. You're going to let me put military bases in there. We're going to trade a lot of this gold together.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, I was just thinking about it. It's like it is this competition. And so I think they're willing to do this because China has its own, like, I would say it's borderline slavery what happens over there, too. There's a whole population that's suppressed and that is also working insane hours. There are people that live in the factories that don't get to go home for months.
The suicide net.
The suicide net sitting outside. Yeah. So it's like, you know, they're able to compete on this market because they're not having to be ethical about their decisions on what they make. And so the United States and these other countries are like, well, we can't do that in our own country. We got to find another way to compete here.
Mm.
So, yeah, this is the end of my deep dive. It's just, again, I wanted to kind of step away from what's happening in the mainstream and what we've seen in Iran and Israel and in the past of U.S. because I've covered a lot of that stuff. This one was just kind of like season it with something different because these are things that are happening in real time as we speak.
Sure. And we want you guys to just be more aware in general of the planet and the things going on in these various regions that aren't often discussed. And that's what's so amazing about the deep dives. We're not forced to be local to like, oh, what happened today? We can go back, look what happened 10, 20, 30, 100 years ago, sometimes even longer than that. And we've got so many phenomenal deep dives done already. If you go to Gray Area Talks on YouTube, you can watch dozens and dozens and dozens at this point of Tim's phenomenal deep dives, my commentary as well, my info as well.
We're also on Rumble. You can watch the full videos there.
Every
Sunday I'm doing a deep dive. And of course we can't cover every single deep dive on this show. And I also do a newsletter where I'm doing deep dives out of that. And I'm creating these articles based off of like condensed down information for you to learn about. And if you click on the link when you go to Gray Area Talks, you can find all of that.
Yeah, it's all there. We're super proud to be able to offer this information. And this is the thing about like our show, why I think it's unique, why I think it works. I want to monologue. I want to do news blitz, but I also want the chance to be able to in real time learn something new and then analyze the information, have a conversation with you about it. And I know you're really researched on whatever you've gone down the line on.
I like to like, I'm like almost like granular. I like to just go in and focus on like these core things. And then that's why I like you come in with like all the different flavors and the seasoning of what's happening.
It's microscope perfect. And then 30,000 foot view where you get the full perspective. You can also see the forest for the trees, but also touch the tree and know what it is. And then we love doing that. We think it's a really unique show. Just want to remind you guys, coming up in the next hour, we have Amy Dangerfield joining us. You're not going to want to miss that. I want to go ahead and show this. Were you able to find it on my Twitter, the Lebanon stuff? Were you able to? All right. I want to go ahead and show what's going on right now. Lebanon's getting destroyed, man. And keep in mind, in the peace plan, the peace proposal, I don't know where it is right now. The end of Israeli military operations in Lebanon, that's point three. Breaking, the Lebanese Red Cross reports more than 300 killed or injured in the latest wave of Lebanon strikes. Can we go to that video there in the top left when we get a chance? It's really apocalyptic. And we talk about the African mines and stuff and people going through things we can't even imagine. I mean, imagine living here. Imagine dealing with this.
Mm.
It truly is brutal. There may be one more thing that I've retweeted. The thing I retweeted was like, I mean, here's the thing. If this doesn't stop, the war is going to continue.
Well, and that's what we were talking about earlier at the beginning. I'm like, how does this conflict stop in 2 weeks when you have Israel and the United States that are basically in bed together and we don't have full control over what Israel's doing?
Sure. And that's the problem. If you're going to make the argument, this is our strongest ally. Well, the strongest ally needs to listen to us and needs to abide by the ceasefire. Let's go ahead and go to the neocon ghoul roundup, because while we were doing the deep dive, they came in and just threw us a stack of just these neocon ghouls reacting to the peace plan.
Let's go to Lindsey Graham, right?
Yeah, let's go to Lady G first. We were talking, I'm at the Magic Kingdom, y'all. Okay.
I wrote this really long tweet for you. Yeah. I like it long.
We like long ones. Again, a diplomatic solution to end the reign of terror in Iran is the preferred outcome. The supposed negotiating document, in my view, has some troubling aspects, but time will tell. I look forward to the architects of this proposal, some strong young boys. But time will tell. I look forward, blah, blah, blah. The vice president and others coming through to Congress explaining how a negotiated deal meets our national security objectives. As President Donald Trump said this morning, all the highly enriched uranium, all the highly enriched uranium must be removed from Iran and handed over to the United States, the Libyan model. Okay, this ain't happening. We read the Iranian statement. Yeah, they anywhere in there did they talk about giving up the enriched uranium?
Yeah, they're worlds apart on the deals that they want.
So here's the thing. We have Trump, and it looks like he's looking to make a deal here. And then you got the people that are around him, like Lindsey Graham, like Mark Levin. They're pushing. They're like, it's not enough. It's not enough. We must have more death now. Never take no for an answer. Like, they still want the regime change, even though they won't admit it.
They do.
Allowing this regime to enrich in the future would be an affront to all those murdered by the regime since this war started. It would be inconsistent with denying Iran a pathway towards a bomb in the future. That's why I strongly support President Trump's statement today, no enrichment for Iran. When did he say no enrichment for Iran? I pay attention to the news. I've been following the news intently. I have not seen Trump say no enrichment.
I think I saw that on his original 15-point. No, actually, they said you can use it for civilian purposes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And keep in mind, because things get memory hold. I remember, okay, around the time of the 12-day war, may have been before, may have been after, Witkoff going, okay, well, they only want to enrich up to 3.5%. We can agree to that. And then he comes out a day later and goes, no enrichment on Fox News. He's like, stares, no enrichment. Like Bongino, there, I've seen the file. He killed himself.
Okay, so this is an article.
Okay, here. Trump, there will be no enrichment of uranium in Iran. President Trump said Wednesday that Iran will not enrich uranium and the U.S. will work with the country to dig up the B-2 bombers. What? To get the bodies or something? I don't know. The latest agreement reached between two countries. The United States will work closely with Iran, which we have determined has gone through what will be a very productive regime change. This is taunting the bull here. There will be no enrichment of uranium. The United States will be working with Iran, dig up and remove all the deeply buried B-2 bombers, nuclear dust. It is now and has always been under very exacting satellite surveillance. Nothing has been touched since the day of the attack. We are and will be taking tariff and sanctions relief with Iran. Many of the 15 points have already been agreed to.
I can't understand this thing.
It's so creepy.
I'm just saying, like, there's so much information war. Like, you know, Iran saying, oh, we got our agreement on the 10 point. And then this is from today that he's saying, well, they're agreeing
for our 15. Apparently so.
Make it make sense.
So yeah, that's a key analysis that you do there, Tim, about Trump. He's reflecting on the 15-point plan, not even on the 10-point plan.
Right.
And he's like, okay, well, some of the things in the 10-point plan are also in the 15-point plan. So they've agreed to some of those. So that's good. Hey, at least they're having a negotiation.
And then you got like Lindsey Graham that comes in.
You know, I went to Disney, Rex, and they told me if I clap my feet three times, I just get more war.
That's right. He clicks his heels and then a nuke goes off. That's so sick. Last thing he says, the last thing I'm interested in is for Iran to be able to save face. I'm interested in a deal that will stop their maniacal drive to a nuclear weapon, among other things. What is the other thing? Regime change. And we all know that. Now we'll go to Laura Loomer.
Ooh, your favorite.
Because you guys just handed us a whole stack of this, so we got to read it.
Laura Loomer, she is a boomer. She's critical. She's flip-floppy. She's just like, she's just wishy-washy, man.
I think she's real idealistic. I think she works for another country.
And then I see her attacking your dad like every day. Like, she's just got a hard-on for him. I'm like, jeez.
I'm going to go ahead and read it.
Break.
The reality is, this is from Laura Loomer, the reality is these negotiations are awful for America and they only embolden the terrorist regime in Iran. How is it awful for America that Americans stop dying and that our money stops being spent on a conflict we're already losing? Mm. Luckily, President Trump wasn't in charge of negotiations. What? What?
Trump would never say that.
Oh, okay. So she's removing the credit from Trump for doing the good thing. This is how they like beat Trump. They're like, bad, down, dog. Like that's how they treat him. That's what we need. What we all need to remember when the ceasefire that isn't a ceasefire fails. Ooh, okay. So she's predicting that it's going to fail and Americans are attacked and killed by Iranian proxies of the IRGC. Oh, what's that mean? False flag attacks coming?
Could be.
I mean, wow. Trump understands the real danger and threat posed by the Iranian regime, which is why the people around him, I'm sure we can all figure out who planned the New York Times story, stabbed him in the back yesterday by leaking private Situation Room conversations to New York Times to pretend like they were against the war. Many of these people were on the record supporting the war themselves. She's right. She's 100% correct. She's like, hell yeah, I'm a warmonger. Y'all are being cowards.
At least she stands.
Dude, Laura Loomer, W. Like this is the truth though. Iran will continue being a threat to, well, to the U.S. and Western civilization. That means Israel until the regime is wiped out. I guess that's also true. If you mean Israel, people who think that you can negotiate with the regime don't understand how brutal their Islamic ideology is. President Trump will be proven right in the end. Those who negotiated with the Islamic terrorists who made it look like fools. We're already losing the midterms due to GOP incompetence and representatives who refuse to codify Trump's agenda, blah, blah, blah.
So the part that I want to just quickly address here, she says, people don't understand how brutal their Islamic ideology is. There is some truth to that. Okay. There is some truth to that. Every country has its dark sides. You know, just because it's the underdog that's getting beat up and you've got like Israel and the United States coming in and making these haymakers and they're, you know, now the underdog does not mean that Iran doesn't have its own issues in which it treats its people poorly.
Here's how I look at it. Now, like you say, everybody's got their issues. They're not hypocrites. We're hypocrites, man.
In what capacity are you talking about?
Well, they're like, well, we're a theocratic regime. We have the supreme leader. Like, God tells us to do these things. God tells us to, like, be martyrs, to fight for the cause or whatever. And in America, we're like, oh, we're liberal, happy time friends. We want international world order. We want peace around the world. We're like,
murder, kill them all, take the oil, glass them.
You're like, they're ideologically consistent. Like, they're like, at least we know we're treating our people this way. We know we're doing these things. We're not ashamed.
They're not a mystery box. Yeah, like, the idea that they're a mystery box is ridiculous. Like, the U.S. is really the mystery box. You know, we really don't know what we're going to do.
Okay. I'll give you that.
We can predict them. That's the claim that I'm making here, and if you can predict somebody, then you probably can reason with them. Yeah. You can have negotiation, which is why, like, here's the thing. I've been very, very black-pilled on Trump. I'm white-pilled on this. I think there is a strong chance this goes through and that we actually see end hostilities, but we're worried about the various factors. I mean, these people are super upset. Like, these neocons are, they're super mad right now.
No more military money for me.
That's right. That's right. I'm going to read the next Laura Loomer tweet. The official Iranian foreign ministry accounts are posting images of President Trump bowing down to Iran. Take a look at the post by the Iranian embassy in India. Muslims never negotiate in good faith. That's taqiyya, which is the Islamic practice of being able to lie to further the religious interest. They are stalling while their propaganda arm, the U.S. media, which includes woke right broadcasters and elected Democrats, turn on President Trump and move to impeach him and call for him to be removed by the 25th Amendment. The Islamic Republic of Iran, if allowed to collect a toll through the Strait of Hormuz, will bide their time through the remainder of the Trump administration and pad their bank accounts to fund Iran's terrorism for decades to come. Then, the second Trump is gone, they will build a nuclear weapon and attack the U.S. and Israel. Negotiating with terrorists only makes them stronger. Sadly, I think the U.S. is going to learn.
You know who she's talking about when she talks. She's calling here.
Lay it on me.
She's saying she had woke right podcasters, elected Democrats. So that 25th Amendment. Now I watched. She's definitely talking about your dad yesterday on the show. He went on. I forget the guest.
He was talking to Robert Barnes.
Okay, yeah. And so they went on, and he was talking about like what are the chances that they could like the 25th Amendment. You can probably clarify better than I can.
Well, so 25th Amendment means that the cabinet realizes that, like, president's lost his mind. They get him out of there. It's actually a lot harder to get than impeachment, as Barnes kind of detailed. But now that Trump has talked about the two-week ceasefire, I mean, literally just that he can say something, and then everything else, like the weeks and the months of just crazy genocidal language and attacks everywhere and starting the wars he said he'd never start, all that just goes out of the window. And now everyone's like, you said Trump should be 25th. He's being insane.
How dare you? Dude, not my president, Trump. What happened to the old Alex? That's not the Alex I remembered. He's supposed to be a neocon.
He's supposed to support war. And it's just like, no, like, we've never supported the war here. We've never changed. We've always been 1776. We've always been America first. Well, whatever MIGA means, like, we're just not that. We're not making Israel great again.
And then you just look, Laura Loomer, you even got like the quartering coming in trying to throw his haymakers from the top.
But it's all jokes. It's all jokes. No. It's all, everything he says is humor. So none of it's to be taken seriously.
No, I honestly realized that we got very gaslit that night when we debated.
Dude, it was crazy, man. Yeah. And the thing is like, he takes that away as some sort of win when like, we're just telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and like he's like, oh, I was able to lie convincingly. And it's like, well, not really, bro.
Just to give you guys background, because maybe not everybody was watching our show. Sometime last week, we did a debate between Rex and the quartering. I kind of sat there, moderated it. And Rex was
a debate that wasn't the debate because he doesn't believe in anything.
Right. And Rex was just trying to get him to stand on business because he said some wild outlandish thing.
Glass Iran, bury them, take the oil and move on.
Right. So then when Rex confronts him on these issues, he's like, I was just joking, man. I don't really believe these things, but then now I see him coming out with posts and like he's being serious. He's on
Twitter every 30 minutes, yeah. Like gloating about quote unquote being right about the war. Why I thought that you didn't support it.
Yep.
You know, why are you acting like you now support the limited military action?
Yeah. So look, he is trying to do political commentary.
Dude, this is serious political commentary. I'm going to read it. Boats are passing through the Strait of Hormuz right now. Feel free to find the mini clips showing it. Lebanon was not a part of the ceasefire. Trump capitulated nothing. We've read the agreement. Oh, okay, it's point number 3 in the 10-point peace plan that Trump says that they're working off that framework. This is political commentary, sir.
It is.
You don't. So you coming on the show and saying everything you've ever said on Twitter is a joke. You're too afraid to debate one position with me. Not one position. He said he had no positions, that everything he's ever done.
It was just
joke.
An easy cop out.
But that's,
there's a lot of people that are doing
but
that.
That's the point I want to make. He's not even that important. It's just an example of what we struggle against. And you have Laura Loomer here talking about the negotiations, and there are points in here that I agree with. Like, she's right. The neocons that support the war are now lying about supporting the war. Now, someone like Laura Loomer, you could actually have a debate with, because she would actually stand on business and represent her position. Even if it's evil, even if it's crazy.
She would. Yeah, go ahead.
Even if it's evil, even if it's crazy, what's worse than that to me are these the chicken crap cowards that act like they're, I don't do it. I'm just a blob. You can't touch me. I'm a cloud. And they have these hardcore political takes. What are your thoughts?
Agree with you on that. But with Laura Loomer, she's lost all credibility in my eyes.
Okay.
Because I see her doing the wishy-washy stuff. She went to India like this last month.
Ooh, okay.
And she's out there like taking pictures in front of the Taj Mahal. I love the Indian people. There should be a picture on X with like a montage of all the nasty stuff that she said about Indians and how they like need to go. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You're good. Go ahead.
But like, if we can find it, and I'm just saying, she's like, I love India. This is the greatest trip I had. The Indian people are so amazing. And literally like 6 months before, she's just completely ragging on it. So when I see that wishy-washy stuff, I'm like, you don't really stand a lot. You're just going where the wind blows or where the business opportunity is or what makes sense for you signaling.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of that. And she's like, she's just like going after Indian people as hard as you can go on Twitter. She's going after them. She's over there. I love you. It's so wonderful. See? Oh, the elephant. Oh, I love you. And
she wrote, I love you. Wow. Look at that.
She drew a demonic Talmudic sigil on the elephant. To turn into a beast of war.
So my whole thing is like, if you're going to hate Indians, you're going to hate something, you know, like own it, right? True. Don't try to sit there and be wishy-washy at the end and try to make it seem like you're such a peaceful person. So I throw her in the same boat as the quartering, believe it or not. I think she's going to stand on like business, but that standing is on like sand. So.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, it's all just it constantly fluctuates, and we're going to be ideologically consistent. That's one of the many missions of this program. I want to remind you guys right now, methylene blue tincture sale. Get it for under $17 every month. Just subscribe and save. You don't have to think about it. A lot of people, they get the product. They love it. They don't reorder. Go ahead and reorder. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. We've also got the InfoWars cooler, limited edition. Get that for $99.99. Get that for $79.99. If you are a VIP member, we love the VIP program. We will be right back here with Amy Dangerfield in the third hour. We love it. Stay tuned. Infowars.com, The American Journal.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now, new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN Zone website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out, sort of put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record, good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexandershore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandershore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexandershore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexandershore.com, and I thank you for your support.
State investigators backed by the New Mexico Department of Justice under Attorney General Raul Torres launched a full-scale search of the former Epstein estate.
The so-called Truth Commission seeks to identify ranch guests and state officials who may have known what was going on at the 7,600-acre property or taken part in alleged sexual abuse.
The fact of the matter was that he was basically doing anything he wanted in this state without any accountability whatsoever. And the ranch that exists out near Stanley, New Mexico, is basically on a two-lane highway in the middle of nowhere. It was him with an airstrip and a sprawling place that he brought folks to that we know very little, if nothing, about.
Now renamed San Rafael Ranch and owned by Texas businessman Don Huffines since 2023, oddly enough.
This was obviously a dark place, and we wanted to put light in a dark place. It always shines the brightest when you do that.
Hang on a minute. Why did Republican Texas comptroller candidate Don Huffines, through his venture firm Hest Investments, pour $1.8 million into Secretome Therapeutics back in 2024, a biotech outfit pushing regenerative medicine with their lead product, STM-01, derived from neonatal cardiac progenitor cells sourced from babies under 30 days old, specifically infant heart tissue from newborns with congenital defects undergoing surgery. Meanwhile, Huffine's family snapped up Jeffrey Epstein's notorious Zorro Ranch in New Mexico at public auction years after the notorious transhumanist's death. A Texas politician tied to Epstein property in New Mexico, who is now invested in transhumanist therapies, literally banking on infant hearts. Bizarre. Epstein openly discussed using the ranch as a base for outlandish eugenics-inspired schemes, including plans to impregnate multiple women with his DNA to seed an improved human race through artificial insemination and genetic engineering, ideas he pitched to scientists from the Santa Fe Institute and other elite circles he courted in New Mexico.
My name is Juliette Bryant. I was kidnapped by Jeffrey Epstein 22 years ago. A lot of frightening things happened there.
I went outside to have a cigarette. I saw these three lights like in a triangle formation. Everything got weird. I felt very scared. But then what happened is I got locked out, so I couldn't get back in. And that's also the time when I have that sort of flashback where I wake up paralyzed in a lab. There were six beings in hazmat suits around me. There's like a female doctor by my head.
It's okay.
Whispers of even darker horrors have swirled around Zorro Ranch for years, fueled by an anonymous 2019 email purporting to come from a former staffer claiming that two foreign girls died by strangulation during rough fetish sex.
and were buried in the quiet hills nearby on orders from Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell.
In fact, there are records dating back to the mid-1990s of abuse happening at the ranch, including a report to the FBI in 1996 by a survivor and multiple other reports over the years. And one of the significant and important pieces of this case is to understand why justice was never pursued at the state, local, or federal level.
Zorro Ranch isn't short of strange. Back in July 2008, right as Epstein was checking into his cushy Florida jail suite for that sweetheart plea deal, his Zorro Trust suddenly clutched a $80 million winning Powerball ticket by none other than Bryce Gordon, Epstein's longtime ranch manager and the guy listed as trustee who signed off on the payout. The payout is confirmed by public records. Sounds more like a payoff. Epstein starts prison time and boom, his New Mexico playground gets an eight-figure cash infusion, likely to keep something very quiet. This renewed scrutiny could finally unearth long-buried truths or expose how deep the rot truly went.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with Liver King. You say you've taken methamphetamine before. I want you to take our medical grade, take 30 minutes to kick in, so good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother. Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
The most powerful morning broadcast in the nation, in the world, The American Journal. We do the deep dive, we do the news blitz, we do the guest interview, we do it all. But I've got breaking news here for you right now. Rex Jones reporting live for Infowars.com. Shipping sources say Iran's threatening ships trying to pass through Hormuz right now. From Eric Doherty, just in, oil tankers have been stopped from going through the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian news claims because of Israel's ceasefire breach.
Here we go.
Weren't we just talking about this?
Here we go again.
Wow. Iran knows what's coming. If they screw peace talks, the first 24 hours of ceasefire are critical. We're going to continue to cover that. Wanted to break that news live to the audience. We have Amy Dangerfield joining us now on the show. Amy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on the show. We really enjoy, we're going to have a great conversation here. There's a lot of things happening in the news cycle right now. And actually Rex just broke something. I'm sure yes. You just heard it. What are your thoughts on Iran stopping those oil tankers after this whole ceasefire?
Listen, I'm really not surprised. Obviously, we all breathed a sigh of relief yesterday when we heard the news about the ceasefire, but I think that anybody who's been following this, they are not surprised that it is not standing, because obviously a lot of it is contingent upon what Israel does. The ceasefire seems to have been primarily through, you know, Iran and American diplomatic talks. However, when it comes to Israel, that is clearly a force that we cannot constrain, we cannot control. And so really, the longevity of the ceasefire and it lasting the entire 2 weeks, it was really dependent on the way Israel decided to move. And we saw last night they were bombing, this morning, I believe, bombing Lebanon.
Yeah.
One of the, really the most Christian country in the Middle East. I think it's absolutely disgusting right. And demonic. And so I'm really not surprised that Iran is taking a hard stand here.
Well, what it shows me is that, you know, Bibi does act almost in his own interest and autonomously. Sure.
No, absolutely. And the thing is we look at it over here just as Americans, we feel like we have no control. I think the rest of the world just feels like they have no control. Moving forward, of course, we're obviously like anti-war and we're praying for peace. We want this peace deal to go through. Amy, how likely is this in your mind?
Listen, again, it it's all dependent on what Israel does. I mean, surely what we do as well. And I think that really comes down to, is Trump actually gone insane? Is he the madman that was reflected in that post that he put out on Easter? Or was that a strategic tactic that he used to make them think that he had gone mad, so that they would be willing to come to the table with peace talks and negotiations? But ultimately, I believe the true conservation of the peace proposal, it rises and falls on Israel, and we cannot control them. They're acting of their own accord. And so it's going to depend on.
I mean, Lebanon's a disaster.
It is. It is. And here's the thing, even without Israel in the equation, I look at the peace plan and like the rhetoric that's coming out. Both sides are like claiming victory right now. Right. Iran has come out with this long statement saying, oh, we made them cave in to our demands. And then, you know, Pete Hegseth goes on to, you know, goes on air today and being like, oh, well, they came begging to us too. So where do you see the actual plan? Like whose plan is the real plan?
Who do you think
we got 10-point plan and then we got 15-point plan. And Rex and I have been confused all this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all kind of confused. Whenever we've heard any speculation of peace talks or Iran wanting to come to the table with negotiations, they've had their spokespeople come out and say, we are, in fact, not speaking with you guys, right? So it's difficult to tell who is bluffing. I mean, obviously, I'm not very trusting of our government, so I certainly cannot say either way whether Trump is being entirely honest with us. I think that maybe it was a combination of all of the people yesterday calling to invoke the 25th Amendment, just the way that the general population reacted to just the brute force of him willing to literally take down an entire civilization. I think that maybe that kind of caused him to pump the brakes. But when you look at this thing from a bird's eye view, what have we really achieved out of any of it? I mean, when you look at the plan that's on the table, they're allowed to continue enriching uranium, according to them. They still have a supreme leader who is even more radicalized than the original one because he watched his whole family die. And really, the only thing that Iran has not gotten from this so-called agreement is the reparations that they initially asked for. But they do kind of get the opportunity to rebuild their civilization using the money that they get from the toll, from allowing ships to pass through the strait. And they're kind of using that, I guess, in lieu of the reparations. So what has the U.S. actually got from this? I think it would be wise for Trump to just lie to the American public, who obviously aren't as tapped in as all of us, and say, we won, guys. We got all of our strategic outcomes. But anybody who's been following this thing knows that that's just simply not true. I mean, we've just lost American lives, and all of the objectives that they initially set out to achieve have not been achieved. But I think it would be wise for him to just lie and say, we won, guys. We did it. But again, ultimately, I think it's all just going to depend on how Israel chooses to act from here on out.
I have to say, like, we agree, and we think there is real mobility on the U.S. side, people that want peace, but it really is all dependent on really our 51st state in the region. It's U.S.-Israeli empire that we really always talk about on this show, because we're kind of joined at the hip. And we would like to look at things in a vacuum. We're like, okay, it's America, and the American people should be put first, and it's our interests that are the priority. But we're seeing it reflected not just in politics but in media as well. I wanted to ask you this question. What do you think of the neocon faction? Do you think that is going to be – there's been this resurgence in the right wing, so-called right wing. We have these chicken hawks, these war hawks, people that love conflict, that love death. Do you think this is just a flash in the pan, or do you think this is making a resurgence? Do you think this is going to be kind of like the new takeover of the Republican Party back to the age of John McCain?
I don't think they ever really left, to be honest.
Right.
But I think what's kind of heartening for me is seeing this surge of America First candidates really stepping forward and running. And it's not at the level, obviously, of, a presidential level, but we're seeing people who are running for governor, who are running for Congress, running for Senate, people who are boldly claiming that they are America First, they are anti-war, they're against AIPAC, they're against foreign lobbying. And there's been a huge shift, I think, even with normal people, largely due to this war. I mean, it's terrible. It's disgusting. The one positive, I guess, if you could call it that, is the people who are opening their eyes to the fact that the government does not care about them. It doesn't care about them. It doesn't care about the effects that this war has on people economically. Obviously, they're feeling it when they go to fill up gas, right? Obviously, it's impacting our relations with our allies in the region. And people are looking at this and they're saying, did they consider us at all when they endeavored upon this pointless war, this pointless war of choice?
Right.
And so I think that the more people continue to open their eyes, the more viable these America First platforms are going to become, not as just some fringe ideology, right? But something that's actually a viable platform to run on.
Yeah.
And so I honestly think that that's our biggest hope. And we start small. We start with local governance. We start with, the district. We start with the state. And then when we get enough of the people in who reflect our ideals, eventually we can make real change.
No, I think that's a phenomenal point. And when I think about America First, it's not America First in the sense of like isolationism. I think because we're in a global market, we're all connected and we're getting most of our food overseas. We're getting a lot of our consumer items overseas. So there's no way we could like go back to, you know, the 40s and be like, okay, or the late 30s and be like, okay, we're isolated completely and we're not going to do business with anybody. And it's just America only.
I got something to add to this and I want to toss back to you. Like, it's following the golden rule. Like, we want our country to do unto other countries as we would like done to us.
Yeah.
Right? Wouldn't you say that's a good way?
No, that is a good way. And so when we talk about the rest of the world, and I'm sure you're following this as well, I hear the accent. I'm not exactly sure where you're from. Is it Australian? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's a really good guess. Yeah. I mean, I haven't been back to Australia in 10 years, actually. Wow. But yeah, I was born and raised in Australia. I call it Ozmerican now. It's a bit of a weird blend. But honestly, that's why I'm so patriotic and why I love America so much, because seeing the way these Western countries around the world have fallen, Australia included. And by the way, Australia has been one of the countries who have most been impacted economically.
That's
by
what
this
I was going to ask you about.
It's like $12 a gallon to fill up in Australia right now. And it's terrifying. I mean, some people have been acting very erratically in certain regions of Australia. There's no groceries on the shelf. There's a lot of fear mongering that's going on over there. And so, you know, Australia's a mess. The UK's a mess. Socialism is taking over. There's no freedom of speech. In Australia, people are being arrested for wearing t-shirts that say from the river to the sea. There's guys who are behind bars for giving like a 40-second speech on Australia Day, simply stating that Israel is not our greatest ally. And so when I look at that and I look at the freedom that we have here, that's what makes me so patriotic, but also terrified at the same time that we're going to lose it here. They're yes. already passing anti-Semitism laws here in Florida, where I live, also in Ohio. And thankfully, they're not really being enforced, at least not at scale. But I'm scared of what's going to happen when this power grip that Israel has over us, if we don't stop that, they could just click that on button and all of a sudden these laws that breach the First Amendment start being enforced.
I mean, we talk about that all the time on the show, and this is like, it's civil rights, it's human rights, it's literally liberation, pro-humanity. Like, how could you not be for free speech? How could you not be for liberty to say and think and do what you actually believe in, as long as you're not hurting somebody? And that's the real American ethos. And what this country has done, what this state thousands of miles away has done, is they've made us prioritize their interests like they're our interests, and they're just not. On its face, like, Israel's interests are just not our interests. So why are we involved in this? Why do we fund it? Why do we fund the death? Oh, because if we're not running that region, somebody else will. It's the big bad man theory. We have to be the big bad man, right, or else there'll be another big bad man that'll come in. We can't have that. And a lot of the time, what that theory does in the minds of people, and just kind of like the common American thought, is like, well, you know, I'm just Joe Sixpack. I don't know about the war, but I assume the war is good because it's for my empire and the empire needs to propagate itself. They don't even know about any of the dozens of, or hundreds of civilian factions, of populations, of tribes, of people that have been displaced, that have been murdered, that have been killed all around the Middle East, in places they couldn't even point out on a map or know that exist.
Yes.
Right, Tim?
And the question that, yeah, no, you're 100% right. And so this is where I wanted to go with this conversation and ask you, because you're probably, you know, well-versed about what's happening around the world as well. You know, it's very I look at the situation and I see like the United States has so much influence. Everyone across the world follows what the United States does. We breathe. People are like clocking.
It's the show of the world. It's reality TV.
It's the show of the world. So, you know, they're reporting more in the U.S. sometimes than they are in their own countries. But then we also have the ripple effect of all the economic impacts that happen here or the decisions we make impact a country that has nothing to do with it. And so you were talking about something earlier about what Australians are going through. And I wanted to talk about like the standard of living. Are they making as much as Americans, but then also suffering worse on these ripple effects that are happening based off of the conflict and all of that?
I would say earnings like for minimum wage are higher. It's like a $26 minimum wage. I would say when it comes to like industries, you know, gig economy, that type of thing, I'd say it's probably very similar. As well as when it comes to like professional work, but definitely the cost of living is much higher. I believe that Sydney is the most expensive city in the world to live in, if I'm not mistaken, or at least up there, like
it's
one of the very
one or
very
two
top.
With New York. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. And so, and then when it comes to things like grocery prices, gas prices, definitely much higher than over here. Absolutely. Because Australia, it's a mixed economy. It has a lot of government benefits, socialist aspects, you know, there's free healthcare. There is a lot of programs that can qualify you for free education, for example. And, simultaneously, they have a huge immigration problem, illegal immigration problem.
Really?
Where they're flooding the country. Yes. I mean, multiculturalism, it was always prevalent when I lived in Australia, but now you go to a city like Sydney or Brisbane, Perth, any of these major cities, and you are hard pressed to look around and spot like a white Australian, honestly.
Who's
and so
moving there?
People from all over the world, a lot of Asian countries, and a lot of third and second world countries. Like we do get the overflow of these war-torn countries, where it's no longer safe for them. They come over to Australia, a lot of Lebanese. And, unfortunately, what happens then is these illegals also get access to the same level of benefits that the Australian people had. And these are things that I was grateful for growing up. I mean, I took a couple of ambulance rides to the hospital and they were free. But now we're at the point where the resources are absolutely overwhelmed and people are calling for ambulances, especially in rural places. And they're just not coming. They're not coming in time. People are dying. There aren't enough hospital beds available. And because of this issue where there's just everything is free, but there's not enough to go around for absolutely everybody, they have to put the cost of living up to make up for that. And so people are really struggling in Australia.
Well, you're making such a key point here. It's the same people that want these wars that also want the mass migration. So you go, hold on, you want us to go pay and spend billions of dollars to go destroy these countries over there, and then you want us to take the migrants that result from the economic turmoil and the destruction of their nation.
And then they complain. It often comes out as a complaint of like, wait, how did all these immigrants end up here?
They're the most passionate. I hate the Muslim, blah, blah, blah. But you brought them over here.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
And it's like if the country go ahead.
Well, I do have a theory about it because Australia is also one of the most dystopian countries when it comes to things like digital ID, for example. Like I've been on record for a while now saying that I wouldn't be surprised if Australia becomes the first Western country to resemble communist China and basically like everything except names with like a social credit system and things like this. They recently passed a law where you literally need to even upload your ID to be able to use things like Google, for example.
What?
Not sure if that's been fully enforced yet, but yeah, you do need to use digital ID. And I think what they're trying to do is two things simultaneously. They're trying to create this dystopian, technologically advanced society while simultaneously ushering in the third world and creating so much instability by doing so that eventually all of the Australians are going to call out for a solution. Hey, please help us get these people out. And then that's when they're able to really switch on the digital ID at scale and enforce something like a social credit system. So it's like your typical problem reaction solution playbook in
right.
my view.
Right. And also a big part of it is the people you're bringing in from the third world or whatnot. They're just happy to be living in a first world country. So they're going to take whatever kind of deal is given to them. And ultimately, the goal is to replace you and to have a new permanent underclass, kind of like in 1984. You have the elites, and then you have kind of the people living out in the boonies that are just kind of controlled. And that's what they're trying to do.
It is kind of like a negative feedback loop. And I even, like, we talk about the illegal immigration that comes out of Mexico. I mean, it had, you know, the United States decided, instead of going into the conflict with Iran, and said, hey, let's address the cartel and yes. all of these things that are happening in our hemisphere that are causing the ripple down effect where the people don't have the stability to want to live. Like, come on. I mean, we don't think about, like, when we go home and driving on the way home and, like, having a point check, like a checkpoint where somebody has a gun up to your head and sure. says, well, you need to pay us sure. if you want to go back home.
Yeah. I mean, like, here's the thing. There are military actions that we would support, right? But we never get anything that would actually benefit the people. It's always just for some giant transnational capital scheme. From what you're telling me, Australia sounds like a Terminator or a Brave New World.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and again, that's why I'm so patriotic and why I love the United States. It's why I haven't been back to Australia in 10 years. In fact, I don't actually think I could go back anymore. I'm pretty sure I would be arrested if I went back. Yeah. Because I mean, I've been pretty outspoken about what I think when it comes to Israel and Bibi Netanyahu and the Likud party. And honestly, the people in Australia who've been arrested, it's been for far more benign things than stuff that I've said. So honestly, I am a little fearful of going back, and that upsets me to an extent, not because I want to live there, but you know, I'm married. We're trying to start a family. One day I'd like to bring my children to meet their grandparents over there. And so that's a little bit upsetting for me. And I don't really think that there's anything that can correct course in Australia right now. I mean, people are starting to wake up. There was a march for Australia last year where tens of thousands of people took to the streets protesting. And of course, the Australian media labeled it as white neo-Nazis, right? Which is what they always do. Whenever you try to speak truth to power, they just label you as all of these names. They try to discredit you. So the people are waking up, but again, I'm a little bit fearful that it's already too late.
I hate seeing those little cops prance around their yellow vests with their little cute hat. Oh, la, la, la. We're all happy. Those are the most authoritarian Nazi-like thugs. I mean, think about COVID. I mean, I've seen videos of a parent dragged away from their child as their child is force injected with a vaccine. That came out of Australia. I've seen videos of people raid people's homes and come and grab old ladies because they're posting on Facebook about going to a anti-mask protest.
Yeah.
Talk about that maybe a little bit.
That's what radicalized me actually in politics. I was actually quite apolitical prior to COVID. I just hadn't really informed myself. I would say I lived a fairly regular life. And I was living out in Maui, Hawaii. That's where I initially moved when I came to the United States. I was out there for 4 years. And then COVID hit. It was pretty bad in Hawaii. I'd say it was one of the worser states. You know, people were getting in trouble for walking out on the beach, you know, police approaching them. And so I decided to move over to Florida. And while all of this was happening, my mom would call me still every day, even when I was in Hawaii, which I still considered to be pretty bad lockdowns. And she would say, I am so relieved that you're in America. And that's kind of what radicalized me to think, like, what are the difference between these political systems? That what, you know, Australia is currently experiencing is so different to the freedom that we still have in the United States, especially in these red states, right? Which is why I moved out here to Florida. And it got me really curious and actually started to really expand my understanding of political systems.
Sure. Well, it's a beautiful thing to be able to participate in free society, to have First Amendment, to have Second Amendment, all the things we take for granted in America. These other nations, they don't have the rights that we have. And this is something that we discuss all the time on the show. You know, if we're really about exporting democracy, if we're really about exporting free speech, then instead of J.D. Vance wagging his finger in front of the EU leaders, you know, instead of going to this war with Iran, why haven't we blockaded Britain? Why haven't we blockaded any of these nations that are suppressing and oppressing their own people? And I think it's so clear to see. And it's so obvious that these are deprivations of human rights. These are illegal. These are crimes against humanity, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what, and when we come back from the break, I do want to ask you just a little bit about kind of like the differences between the U.S. and the rest of the world and the things that, you know, we might not understand how good we have it, because it's very sure. often that, like, I have conversations and sometimes I catch myself as I've read a story and I'm like, oh, wow, that's really bad. I wouldn't want that.
Absolutely.
We're good over here. But, yeah, we're coming up on a break here. This is a phenomenal conversation. We want to continue doing this. You guys, you should give her a follow.
Absolutely. You got to follow her on Rumble. Want to let y'all know we got that methylene blue tincture sale. Going to keep telling you about it. 72% off. If you're thinking about taking methylene blue, taking it in the past before, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get that methylene blue. Really incredible product. We got methylene red as well, our own proprietary blend, and the cooler bundle. We're going to be right back with Amy Dangerfield after the break.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it, and you like it, and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into, and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigley, our sponsor, has a really high-quality, private-label, top-selling brand that we were able to private-label we're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high-quality zeolite. Please do your own research. And then go to thealexjonesstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Inner Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick. Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bovine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this zeolite detox formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners, the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now, please visit thealexjonesstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber, lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time. So all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs. Cancel any time, $30 a month. Get $40 to spend in the store. Special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything, thealexjonesstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your zeolite formula now at thealexjonesstore.com.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
up on The Alex Jones Show. It's going to be live at 11 a.m. Central. You don't want to miss that. You want to stay tuned. We're joined by Amy Dangerfield. We're doing this interview. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins here on American Journal. How are you doing, Amy? Go ahead and talk about what you want to talk about, Tim.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you about, like, you were touching upon something earlier here with the differences, you know, here in America, and you're like, I'm so blessed to be in America. And let's just highlight some of the things that we have, you know, way better than the rest of the world and that we kind of don't even realize about it. Because I have things that I've seen, but you probably have a better idea.
Yeah, I mean, I just think like an encoded, like, Bill of Rights, right? The Constitution. Like, Australia doesn't have anything that even closely resembles that. And so that's why it's so easy to take away people's liberties. Obviously, Australia was disarmed in the 90s. So it's extremely difficult to own a firearm. And obviously that is to defend against a tyrannical government. Ultimately, that is one of the core reasons why. And Australia's government is certainly becoming tyrannical, more and more so by the year. And there isn't really anything that the will of the people can do to push against that, especially as they implement more of these dystopian policies that impede upon the First Amendment and their right to privacy. Australia is a Commonwealth country, so it is the little brother of the UK. And obviously in the UK, we've seen very similar issues when it comes to illegal immigration, when it comes to things like digital ID, and when it comes to things like being arrested for tweets. I mean,
arrested for tweets. Really?
Yeah. In the UK, there's been over 1,200 arrests for tweets. So are you guys familiar with the grooming gang situation in the UK?
No.
I am. Break it down.
So essentially, this gang of Pakistani men have abused thousands upon thousands of women. And because of the cultural sensitivity and not wanting to appear racist, some of these women who have spoken out and in fact made posts calling out the Pakistani grooming gangs have faced worse repercussions than the rapists themselves.
Wow.
It's sickening. So they're making these tweets calling out the situation, calling out the revolving door of justice where sometimes they take these guys in, they go to charge them, they release them shortly after. And the more attention this situation is getting, people are posting about it online. And then the next thing they know, police is showing up on their doorstep to apprehend them for bringing awareness to it for their racism.
Right. The victim becomes the criminal and the criminal becomes the victim. The criminal is protected by the system. The criminal is let out on bail or no bail at all. The person that talks about it tries to raise attention to it. I mean, we played the clip on a Harrison show when I did War Room, and it's some ridiculous and just – why do they wear the powdered wig? All of it it's so insane. It's ridiculous. And the guy is like, I don't want to pay for migrant health care. This is such a grave and serious offense that you are going to spend 2 years in prison to think about your actions. And it's just like, screw you, man. You're not enforcing a law. Like you're enforcing a totalitarian state. You're enforcing a Nazi regime, right?
Yeah. That's basically, what it is at the end of the day. And at least that's where we're heading. All of the signs are on the wall. And to me, the United States really is the lost bastion of freedom in that regard. And that's why it terrifies me that we do have these anti-Semitism and hate speech laws. Like what even is hate speech, right? At the end of the day, as long as it's not directly threatening violence against somebody, right?
There's clear examples of that. And then there's other ones where they just take that one example and they blanket it for everything else. And it's those are two very different situations.
I like the idea that, we don't know what free speech is. Like hate speech isn't free speech, blah, blah, blah. Here's what free speech is. You can't slander somebody in writing. You can't defame somebody with your speech. You can't call for action. You can't call for violence. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater, anything like that. Anything else is fair game. Totally fair game, especially.
I mean, well, you can do those things, but then there's legal recourse that comes with it, right? Like if you slander someone, then you'll get sued by them civilly. Right. But in Australia, if you do something like that and you're calling out the wrong group, a protected group, then you get arrested through criminal proceedings.
That's insane.
That's a very different thing. When it comes to the hate speech laws that are currently being enacted in Australia, I think they're some of the most dystopian in the world. They carry up to a 5-year prison sentence. And it is not even if what you say directly results in a Jewish person being harmed. It's simply if you instill fear inside of them. That is the verbiage and the language used around
that well, so I can say, Tim scared me. I want to throw him in jail. Like, you see how insane, you see how insane that is? But, oh, no.
Yes. And who's the arbiter of fear? Like, who's the arbiter of what constitutes true. That fear? Well, and this and that's the, why it's such a slippery slope.
And this was the same thing we were complaining about. I mean, this is what moved me from the left over to the right. And now I'm kind of back center. But, like, in COVID time period, they were censoring everybody for COVID related topics. You had the Democrats just throwing people off of accounts right. left and right. Some of it to combat misinformation, which were just completely like you could discredit and disprove those the specific theories, but it was like everything was fair game for them to go and suppress. And that was like, yeah, that doesn't work out. And so now we're seeing the pendulum switch the other way. And like even people on the right now are calling for censorship and the whole you're an anti-Semite and all those things just for questioning what Israel is doing.
And notice how they never pass less laws. They never take laws off the books. It's just, it's building up this corporate red tape structure that ultimately, you know, down the line in the future when everything's integrated with technology, the digital ID, the social credit system that you're talking about, Amy, there's going to be no way to run from any of this stuff. And we're still in a very early age of even looking or knowing what that looks like.
Yeah, very true. You know, even here in the United States, I mean, thank God for free speech platforms like Rumble and like X. I mean, even X has been a little bit dicey. Like there are some posts that have shown up on my timeline where it's like, this post is being reported or this is a censored post and you click it and it's something like super benign or informative. So it's right. even getting a little bit dicey with X. But I will say like last week, I had my first YouTube video just completely stripped and removed from the platform.
Really? For
and
what?
It was literally just a video of Nick Fuentes saying that he supported my wedding because my husband and I, we wore our America First hats in some of our wedding pictures after the fact. And it was just him saying like, hey, America First is a movement. This is a community. It's a part of people's lives. They care about it. It was literally a wholesome video and it was taken down for hateful conduct.
Wow.
Apparently, just because the person who was saying it was Nick Fuentes. And
well,
so
No. They're saying it because America First is hateful because we're Israel First. We're MEGA. Do you not see? You're being quite racist when you do something like that.
So the problem here is, you know, there are some people that I see take the America First thing too far. There's always extremes with every platform, every ideology in certain regards. But if you just look at kind of the baseline understanding of what people are trying to get is just
prioritization
yeah. of just making sure we have the things that we need met here before we're just shipping a bunch of money overseas and getting into all these foreign entanglements. The only problem is where it gets extreme and where they start bucketing everything is the people who take it to the extreme and be like, we need to like start killing all the Muzzies and start killing all the Israelis and the Jewish people are the satanic cult and they lump the entire group instead of attacking the individuals. And that's where it gets dicey. But again, it makes it hard for the people who are trying to push the right agenda.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I will say that I wouldn't conflate America First and that, kind of movement with isolationism. I don't think it's that at all. I think that a lot of people who claim to be America First were supportive of the actions in Venezuela, for example, because that's our part of the hemisphere. Obviously, there was an issue with like drug cartels and things like this. So I think that was actually beneficial for the interests of the American people versus getting involved in foreign entanglements overseas at the behest of a foreign nation because they want to maintain regional dominance when Iran has never done anything to attack America.
I think what it comes down to is that the American people want to see themselves prioritized. And when you talk to Americans, of course, domestic policy is always the thing that people are upset about. They're upset about grocery prices, gas prices, infrastructure, things happening here. And the price tag for fixing things here is so dirt cheap compared to the billions and trillions they spend on these damn wars. I mean, we broke it down and this isn't even the full sum of the number. I'm sure it's actually much higher. We take the $11,500 that they're spending every second. We multiply that over 2 weeks. That is, what was that figure again? That's 1,210,000.
Yeah.
So think about it. We got 35,000 homeless veterans. We could have given 35,000 homeless veterans $11,000 like 100 times over. But more than that, even, but we couldn't do that. We can't do that. Can't do anything for the people at home. It's always for the people overseas. So what I see America First is it's the farmers. It's the manufacturers, the small business people here at home. It's the people that have to live here and deal with the American system that's supposed to be the greatest thing in the world. We're the greatest country in the world, but the people here suffer.
Yeah, the people here suffer. And people are going to have different stances. I think you and I probably may have differences in terms of what the Venezuela conflict should have been and what the narrative around that. I firmly believe it was more about the oil and the control over our own hemisphere than it was about the drug cartel that Trump was pushing, because a majority of the fentanyl he was claiming, cocaine, comes out of China, and then you've got cocaine Mexico. That comes out of Mexico as well as Colombia. But
it is our hemisphere.
Sure. Yeah.
Exactly. So, that's what I was going to say. Sure. But I mean, I lumped that in at the end, but I did preface by saying it's our hemisphere. It's something that can directly benefit the American empire at the end of the day.
Yep.
How does attacking Iran give any benefit to America? I mean, again, they say it's so that, you know, Israel can have regional dominance, but that terrifies me even more. I think you need to have checks and balances in the Middle East. I don't think that we want Israel to have total hegemony over the Middle East. That they're the ones who actually have nuclear weapons that don't have any type of agreement tied where we can go and inspect them, right?
Yeah.
Whereas we did when it came to Iran. So none of this makes any sense to me. I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to lobbying and foreign interests. I don't think it's any coincidence that Donald Trump's AIPAC takings went from, I think it was like $20 million, which is still a lot of money, but now over 200 and something million dollars shortly after he was elected.
Right.
And now we're getting into a war that could have potentially sparked World War III and still could, by the way.
Yeah.
Right. And I truly believe that that is at the behest of a foreign government. And that is what we need to stop. We need to do things that actually prioritize American citizens. And totally that truly does not, in my view.
No, I agree. And Rex and I are on the same page as you. And we just appreciate this conversation. And you did mention to us that you are doing something about this America First. Could you clarify what you've been kind of cooking up here and that you're going to be launching pretty soon?
Sure. So again, I feel like the one white pill that's come from all of this is even regular people, everyday normies, they're starting to open their eyes and seeing that the parties in their traditional form don't actually represent them, the people. And there's been major breaks inside both of the parties on the left as well as the right. We have people, you know, who are even withdrawing from their parties to run as an independent because the party's values no longer reflect them. So there are America First candidates who are running left, right, center, independent, libertarian. And I essentially have a vision of putting them all together in one room and showing people that the America First movement is not only vital to the interests, serving in the interests of them, the people, but it's also, it's a viable thing. You could actually run on this platform and you can actually win. You look at the state of Florida, for example, James Fishback. I did a rally with him out in Naples, Florida at Sea to Table. It's the most conservative grocery store in the United States. It was my first live audience podcast since becoming an independent creator. And I was a little bit scared, guys. I thought that, you know, Naples, there's a lot of boomers there. There'd probably be some more neocon type people in attendance. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with James and some of his policy proposals, but I thought that we would get some pushback from the audience. I knew there would be cheers, but I thought there'd be some boos as well. And I was shocked to see that young people came out in record numbers and there was nothing but positivity. That room was electric. And he's now pulling in crowds that are adjacent to like Trump, what he had when I'd say Trump was at his maximum charisma level, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just incredible to see the firepower that's following these America First candidates, and now more and more of them are coming out of the woodworks. We saw Mark Moran in Virginia actually withdrew as a Democrat to run as an independent, but there's some great Democrats running as well. Jose Vega.
Jose and Fishback. We've interviewed both of those guys. Yep.
Jose's great. You know, I would back him more than a Republican, for example, if that Republican was beholden to AIPAC. Mm-hmm. There's actually a guy, Jared Christian, who's running out in Ohio's 12th district, and his Republican challenger is a man named Troy Boldison, who's taken over $250,000 from AIPAC, over $250,000, I would rather endorse and put my support behind Jared, who's made it a campaign prop. He's running on a campaign of economic populism, but also he says that he wants to reach across the political aisle and work with people on the right to help weed out the corruption.
Yeah.
I also got to give a shout out really quick. Sorry to, Casey Butch as well, who's running for governor Ohio. Okay. Running against Vivek Ramaswamy, who is a globalist Trojan horse. And so there's so many of these guys. There's literally at least a dozen of them.
Yep.
And so I'm working with Casey. We're going to put all of these guys in a room together May 2nd. We're going to do a continuous all-day live stream with candidates from the left, right, center, along with America First influencers and commentators. So that way they can come out, they can provide context, they can give endorsements if they so desire, and they can even give cross-aisle endorsements. And that's something that I personally and people I know will be doing, because we're just so freaking sick of the corruption and we want to show the establishment we hate you guys so much that we're literally willing to work together to put an end to the badness. Well, and I think that's what we need right now. We need unity.
That's the thing that I was going to say, is there's finally issues that are big enough for everybody to go, hey, we need to unite on this. We got to stop the death, stop the wasted money, stop the killing, like bring our country back ultimately, because we're not going to have a country much longer. And you can kick the can down the road for a long time, but we're reaching a point where we're going off the cliff here.
Yeah, we are. And what you guys are doing is phenomenal. Amy, do me a favor. After you get off, connect with our producers. We want to get your contact. We want to get in touch with you. We have had a lot of these people on our platform already on the gray area, as well as on InfoWars here, and we want to support this. We want to be able to be a part of this. So I think what you guys are
doing,
I'd
love to have you guys there.
Where is it going to be?
It's going to be in Columbus, Ohio. And I just think this is so important. And the reason why there's so much unity is because people are realizing that the establishment actually engineer a lot of these culture wars through their NGOs that are funding both sides. And they want to keep us fighting with each other so that we're too distracted to notice that they are, you know, getting entangled with foreign interests, that they're committing genocides and that they are betraying the American people, but we're too busy fighting each other to even notice. And so I think that's what people are opening up their eyes to. And the event in person, it's going to be great. It's going to be a meeting of the minds. But even more important than that, it's going to be an all-day continuous live stream. And all of these candidates have the right to use the content to stream it to their own platforms, because we're in a very rare moment in time right now where the movement is on our side. We need to mobilize behind these guys to actually get them through their primaries.
Gotcha.
Wow.
No, this has been a phenomenal interview. We definitely want to be talking with you shortly after the show.
And we want to get connected. We want to go to the event. We want to do all of that. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Amy. Really appreciate your time. Just really quick, where do people find you again?
Yeah, you guys can find me on YouTube, Rumble, and X, Amy Dangerfield, across every platform. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Another phenomenal interview in the books. Really appreciate the great Amy Dangerfield coming on the show, breaking all this down for us. And we really appreciate the global perspective as well. And, you know, maybe we should ask her more about that later next time she comes on.
Yep.
It's just the population in America is so isolated, but you get someone that comes from a country that really has had draconian restrictions on rights for the people are truly oppressed. And these people are so grateful to be here in a country where these things aren't at least, happening large scale.
Yeah. No, you're right. And, it was very interesting to see her rattle off the list of names of people that, like, you know, we've been talking to them, and you just realize this world is a lot more interconnected than you realize. And there's a lot of these grassroots guys that need more support. It's hard to go against people who have already been part of the establishment and have millions of dollars backing them, like a Byron Donalds.
Sure. Absolutely. And
Vivek's a billionaire.
Exactly. I mean, and you can look at Fishbeck and criticize him, say whatever you want. He's running a very effective grassroots campaign, and we're going to see a lot more of this in the future. Not less of it. We're going to see a lot more. This is the new political equation. It's going to be people replicating the success of Trump based off of actually having these original ideas and opinions that don't fit in with the mainstream. The real test of time will be seeing if characters like this, once they get elected, if they actually stick to their guns.
Yes.
And we're going to hold people, they're going to hold their feet to the fire. We're going to hold people accountable. That's our job in all of this, as chroniclers, as people that are doing journalism, doing media. Our job is to track the timeline and make sure there aren't any deviations from it.
Yes.
Is we want the solutions, don't we? We want the solutions.
We always want the solutions. That's why we do the deep dives. That's why we do the news blitz. That's why we do it in a way that's impartial. I mean, we've said this before, but I'll reiterate it here again for you guys. We're not picking a side. We're humanity in America. We want everybody to cooperate. We don't care about the right. We don't care about the left. Whoever has the equation. She mentioned Jose Vega.
Right.
Very grassroots guy from left-wing New York. Guy. He's left-wing, but when we talked to him, he didn't sound very left-wing. He wasn't saying, I want transgender schools all over America. It was nothing like that.
All these issues that define left and right are just so minor, and they don't even matter. What really matters is the death of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people around the world. They want to depopulate the planet. They want everyone under a control grid, a social credit score, a system. We're saying, why do we have to do that? So it's our job to be honest and logically consistent and to bring the best people to you guys that we, in our view, we see as doing that as well. And then we can kind of build that brain trust together.
Yeah. Right. And I also encourage people, you know, that the reason why I was asking Amy a lot about the rest of the world is to open our eyes and kind of clear the gunk that has been piled on us day after day after day, doom and gloom, doom and gloom, doom and gloom. And, you know, that's why I try to bring a little bit of white pill perspective. I was like, hey, talk about how good we have it. You know, we wouldn't be able to sit here in this space right now talking about Trump in China. They would have sent the black truck.
That's right.
Came into this, shut this operation down, grab them, throw them in prison.
Right.
You know? So we gotta count our blessings at the same time.
And we also must preserve them, but to preserve them, we gotta be aware of them. And that's what we're calling for here. Just like we live in such a great country. Even now, the people here are so great. It's our job to wake up our brothers and sisters that have fallen asleep and are under the spell of the Mockingbird media, the mainstream media. It's our job to say, wake up,
mm-hmm.
wake up and realize what's happening now in your own country while you still have the rights and the freedoms left to preserve it and to fight for it.
Now, before we go here, do you want to talk about what your cooking up here for the morning?
Yeah, that's an excellent segue. I appreciate it. So this is the last week ever of the American Journal. Our last show is going to be on Friday. However, I'm going to keep the time slot. I'm going to keep it alive. If you guys want to catch up with me and continue the show on forward, I'm going to be doing my American Journal here on X. I've got a URL for it. I'm going to be setting all that up today. I'm going to be plugging that starting tomorrow. But just know, I'll be doing a 3-hour show 5 days a week in the morning, combined with the gray area stuff that we're going to be doing at night as well. Yeah. More frequently right now, we're doing that show Thursday, Sunday. Probably we'll eventually go back to doing it Tuesday as well. We really love it. So,
and we're not disappearing or anything like that.
No,
The
it's things transition.
Everything's changing here. You know, I mean, people are like, what's happening? What's going to happen? You guys have been dragging this thing out. No, there's real things happening.
There's real things happening behind the scenes. When you see us say, hey, please support us, and like, we need your power to stay on air. Like, that is all 100% true. That's always been true. And American Journal is over on Friday. So if you want the new home of that, follow me, Rex Jones News on Twitter. It'll be live, my profile there every day, as well as the YouTube and Rumble that I'm going to be setting up. Just wanted to plug that. And we got the Alex Jones Show coming up. And we got really powerful information. I mean, I've been so proud of my dad and the coverage he's been doing of the conflict.
Sticking to his guns, man.
Calling balls and strikes, being anti-war, being pro-humanity. We love it. And that's why, like, we're just really proud to be on this historic network and to get this, to do this news coverage, right?
Yeah, man. And we're just going to try to carry the baton. This won't be the last time you guys see us. We'll also be here on Friday.
We'll be on New Network as well.
Yeah. So you guys are going to be getting more of this. But again, sometimes you got to shed the old skin to make something new, and it's going to be bigger and better, guys.
Absolutely. Like the Phoenix, we shall rise from the ashes on the New Network, on the New American Journal Show, on Gray Area Talks, on everything we're doing, because this is an info war, and the info war never sleeps. The info war never takes a break. The info war never pauses or stops. It continues on. It marches forward, and we're in that battle. We're fighting that battle with you, the info warriors out there, the viewers and listeners. We got the Alex Jones Show about to come up. We love you. It's always an honor. Tim Tompkins, Rex Jones, The American Journal. We'll see you on the other side.
Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and you're being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. This is personally one of my favorite shirts in the new line. Now, here's the classic InfoWars logo on a white shirt. Never done black on white. Seems like we should have. Looks great. Got the 1776 on the shoulder. You are literally funding and supporting and wearing your uniform in the fight to defeat the globalists. InfoWars is 28 years old. America is 250. And look at the back of this clean shirt. USA 250, 1776 forever. Semi-quintennial. That means 250, baby. America's birthday with badass hats as well. And then, of course, we've got the new limited edition, America at 250 years old. And the back of these shirts are amazing Americana. And I designed this, the Betsy Ross flag with 250 on it. Get yours now at thealexandstore.com. I'm back because I forgot one point that I want to be very clear about. This is a fundraiser. We need funds to continue on and the new operation. It's urgent. These are historic shirts. We've taken the InfoWar this far. Please take action now. For those of you who have been on the fence over bought anything, thealexandstore.com, but have shared links and things, I appreciate you. But come on, folks. We're the tip of the spear. We need you. We need your support. You're the tip of the spear. Thank you so much.